Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Tyler, what do you think about the reveals of the Jokers, the mystery opponents for Samoa Joe and Britt Baker? Jason Powell on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship yesterday said they're not hyping this as much as usual. I wonder what that's all about. Was it a good thing they didn't hype it too much this week?
Yes, I think almost no matter who it was, probably a good thing to kind of go away from overhyping reveals in AEW. So I think in general, that's a good mission statement to have. But yeah, I mean, the reveals themselves, the women's Joker is, you know, more of, it's been like a year since she's been within AEW. So, you know, I assume there'll be a buy-in match with some of the Japanese women to, give a different flair to that show, which is great. And then, you know, I think I would assume, and I'd be curious if any listeners had a similar reaction. I assume most people had the same reaction I did at the beginning of the show, seeing Johnny in wrestling and like, it's Gargano and it's like a huge moment. And then you feel bad because like, you know, Johnny Elite, you know, he's got many names, but I felt bad. I didn't put in my report that I feel bad that I was like kind of disappointed watching the match from that point. So, I would say, pretty, I thought they're both very good and not earth shattering, which I think is kind of what that Joker position probably should be. So I think on the whole, it was a good effective use of that kind of gimmick.
Yeah. I would say the reveals matched the hype this time, but they didn't match the historical anticipation that obviously, you know, Tony Khan was primarily, but not exclusively responsible for. Some of it is just fan generated excitement, but totally, you know, like, If they had rights to John Morrison's name and they put that on the screen, then that wouldn't have led to that second and a half of, oh, my God, it's Johnny Gargano, that then led to the letdown. I'm not sure what name they have rights to that they could have used that wouldn't have done that. But the other option would have been to have, you know, the former John Morrison, that's what he's best known as, the graphic of him first, his face, and then say Johnny Elite. And that way, at least you see somebody go, oh, who's that? Oh, that's John Morrison. And then it's like, oh, Johnny Elite. So yeah, I in retrospect, given Johnny Gargano was one of the top people speculated on, and rightfully so, 2020 being hindsight, but I think they should have seen this coming. They should have handled that a little bit differently. No big deal, because I mean, the crowd ultimately was into the match, and they were into Johnny, and it was a cool match, a first time matchup between them, which I didn't know. But I think it's Excalibur said that. It was fine. And then, yeah, the Makito thing just felt like, really? You thought that would work? There's a part of the fan base who, you know, whatever, but it's a small slice who are like, yeah, her again. You know, I mean, most people are like, what? The week's worth of speculation, you know, and then when Morrison came, oh, it's Ty Valkyrie or... I don't know. So who were you thinking, just, you know, be honest, and maybe you're on record with this, but who was your coming into the show tonight, your final picks for who the Jokers would be?
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten out of the guessing game within AEW. So, I didn't have any strong intentions cause I didn't want to disappoint myself. So that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I definitely thought it was going to be, you know, Ty Valkyrie after, you know, Johnny Elite came out. That just made total sense as a package deal. And now with all the stuff with, you know, the Forbidden Door and basically a working relationship with everyone except for Impact, Impact people and obviously WWE people, these positions kind of feel a lot more fluid and not as impactful as they had in the past, because, you know, they're probably going to be people either coming in and, yeah, so I don't know. It's kind of lost its luster in general for me. So the fact that I didn't really care coming into the show, I think, at least for me, tells a story of how often this is pulled, and I think it would be good to kind of relax that for a brief period of time, and that being 3 to 6 months or so, so it can kind of get some more impact, no pun intended.
This was the least that I put thought and podcasting analysis into it also. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why, other than I don't want to know ahead of time. I mean, mm-hmm. I just don't. I'm not asking for scoops as far as, oh, please tell me a surprise ahead of time. I get nothing out of that. Not that I would necessarily always get an answer, but it's like, I didn't want to know. But then if you speculate, you're either setting yourself up for disappointment or sounding like you know something that turns out not to be true if you're not trying to say that. And I also did sort of get the sense, because as Jason Paul pointed out, the lack of hype, that maybe this wasn't going to be Cesaro or Johnny Gargano or who are the top women speculated out there?
Yeah, I'm sure there's callers right now who are just yelling at both of us, but
yeah, I'm drawing a blank because I had a couple names before the show that I was thinking of, but nevertheless, not to put you on the spot, I kind of thought, yeah, I don't think this is going to be that huge. I do say, and I wrote this in my Dynamite TV report on PWTorch.com tonight, the influx, the continued kind of conveyor belt of well-known names showing up on Dynamite is, you know, a reflection of Tony Khan's nostalgia for the Monday Night War and, you know, oh, on Nitro, who's going to show up next? You know, it was a very exciting time when wrestlers would show up, you know, just so many names from the 80s and early 90s jumping and reappearing after being away for a while. And it was just sort of the brand. And I don't know if what they have to, and it's fun, you know, like, I think that's just sort of a baseline given, like, it's fun. I'm not saying it's not to see people show up, but is it entering kind of like the TNA, early TNA zone, when, especially in the Wednesday night weekly pay-per-view launch phase of TNA, where it just came across like, well, that we don't have enough young established stars that we really believe in, so our hook is to get you to tune in to see, you know, Lex Luger and what he looks like now, or, you know, whoever else, you know, paraded in who are known names from, especially WCW. And it can take away from the brand that establishing the brand, which is we're super excited about who we have now in today's stars. And we're giving them all the TV time that they need to establish who they are and shine. And AW has a pretty deep roster of people, not only on Dynamite, but also, you know, who wrestle on Dark and Dark Elevation on a regular basis. Is there a danger that every person who becomes available that is brought in, that it feels that way, you know, other than, say, you know, I guess Bray Wyatt. I mean, there's a couple people who haven't shown up who people mm-hmm. thought might. Is there a danger it does start to just feel like Tony Khan doesn't feel like the roster that he has of the, you know, early 20s to early 30s up-and-comers who weren't on WWE TV before, that he's diminishing them? Or am I making too much out of it and it's sort of a one-off fun thing?
Yeah, I think it's a blend. Like, you know, there's not washed up. I mean, you know, like you brought the Lex Luger.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, he's washed up, and obviously wrestlers treat their bodies different, obviously, than wrestlers in the 80s and 90s did. So there's more longevity there, as we see all around the industry. But yeah, I think it's a hybrid of that, where it's, you know, bringing in, it's a conveyor belt for sure, and it is taking time away from younger talent. I mean, you know, there's lots of reports out there about MJF currently, and who knows what's real, what's not, what's negotiation, what's not. So I don't, you know, live and die by those sort of things. But, you know, there's a blend of AEW homegrown younger talent guys on the show tonight, and, you know, new entrants. You have your Swerves, your Keith Lees, things like that. So, you know, I think it's definitely a point where there's just too much going on, and there's not enough time for every wrestler to get time in. And, you know, I don't think it's going to stop. Just like I assume someone will bring up the other glaring issue with tonight's show that I liked a lot. So to say that at the top, but there's a glaring issue that doesn't have anything to do with wrestlers on these shows. Yeah, I think it's not going to stop. And I think it's going to be a point where if you're a younger talent who just, you know, maybe Tony Khan gave you time and now he didn't. I mean, it is what it is, and that's what we can see. But I don't think it's a net benefit to keep adding, you know, people like, you know, Johnny Elite and things like that. And I'm sure someone will ask his trajectory here tonight, but him losing his first match here kind of shows what he's going to be, I think, in AEW as a high watermark. Yeah, if it's a one-off, it's one thing, but it seems like he's part of the roster. So I guess a long way to answer your question is, I think it's a net detriment to getting more long-term stars over within your company that, you know, can be 20-year legacy guys that can come back and be and draw money for you down the line as opposed to what's happening now. Now, that pivot can always happen, but there's a lot of things within AEW that I've seen, you know, pretty that have not changed for a long time now, and I don't know what's going to change that, but yeah, I think there's just too many people of a certain level, right? If there's people, like you mentioned at the top, if there's a Gargano, a Claudio, people like that, I think that's different, but keeping adding, you know, unfortunately, within WWE, their mid-card talents, to keep adding people like that just kind of adds weight to the show that is not totally necessary to kind of get fresh matchups, as opposed to maybe it's been a year and a half since you had a matchup. Maybe you can do another matchup on Dynamite because of that, instead of just having all new, fresh, cool matchups all the time. So, you know, it's a roster formatted that way where you have people, you know, there for a year or two, not 5 years, then that would work as well. But yeah, I just think it's too much at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not against it, Johnny Elite getting ring work and, you know, being there. And I think there's a way to use him, which was tonight. You know, he's a name value guy. He's got a good look and he can still go and he still looks great and he can be, you know, a gatekeeper, the old term jobber to the stars, a guy who just people watch and go, oh, if somebody beats him, that counts for something. And you can, but he can lose, but still just kind of retain the aura. You know, I don't think we're at a point where you want to push him into like TNT title contention, but that to me would be the peak of what you would do with him. But you know, he's flashy and got name value, and he can work. And I'm for him being there. And I thought, you know, in a micro sense, him Samoa Joe beating him is a good use of Johnny, and it was a good showcase match for Joe to advance to tougher competition in the tournament. Tyler, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves and then get the calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. A really good newsletter this week, by the way. I'll plug that in a moment. Also the founder of an editor of pwtorch.com and the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our Blue Logo and Red Logo shows. Those are free or ad-free for our VIP members. And also a bunch of VIP shows like post pay-per-view roundtables, the Wade Keller Hotlines. I went in-depth on the Sasha Naomi situation in a big Wade Keller Hotline yesterday. And also I'm the host of Everything with Rich Van and The Fix with Todd Martin. So go VIP to hear all our shows. All are compatible with popular podcast apps, and you can subscribe through Patreon with your Apple account on your iPhone or through our sign-up page, and also then gain access to our 30-plus-year library, pwtorch.com/govip. And the other voice you hear so far is Tyler Sage of the PW Torch YouTube channel and the AEW Rampage post-show, a VIP exclusive. Tyler, all perspective reports every Wednesday night following during Dynamite alongside my reports. Tyler, good to talk to you again. It's been a couple months.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Very much a lot of work on building out the YouTube show, so it's good to be back here on the audio form for everyone listening. I appreciate that. But, yeah, lots of stuff going on, but very good Dynamite to do the post-show for, so I appreciate you picking it.
Lots of good wrestling on this show. I mean, just like Dynamite in-ring action and some good talking segments too. So we got a lot. I mean, obviously the Jokers is sort of like the newsy thing of the show. The rest was just pretty solid hype for Double or Nothing. And we kind of covered the newsy aspect of the mystery reveal, but there's just a lot of solid stuff and maybe some critiques too along the way that we'll get to. Tyler, before I give out the phone numbers and email and get to our first caller, tell people a little bit about what you're doing on the PW Torch YouTube channel.
Yeah, so brought it back right before WrestleMania, and every day Zach Hadorn and I trade off, and we do about a 5 to 7 minute daily news hit. So if you're not wanting to live on Twitter or pwtorch.com, even though you should be on pwtorch.com to get all your news for the day, you can watch our videos. We'll get you caught up. And Zach and I also do a weekly recap of all the biggest stories in wrestling. It's called the Fireside Chat. And yeah, so we're building out from there. You've got, you know, a video on there too, which I enjoyed. That was, I mean, it's a little old now, but, you know, recapping or doing your booking for WrestleMania, which I thought was very well done. So yeah, we're just, you know, we're still starting it out and growing it. So if you haven't checked it out, that's PW Torch. Just search that on YouTube and you'll see all the content that we have up there now. And we're going to keep building it from there, but I appreciate giving the chance to plug it, Wade.
Like the videos and click subscribe, as they say. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Okay. Well, let's move on to giving out the phone numbers here. You can join the program. We invite you to do so. In fact, if you're live streaming the show, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your phone. That flags you on our switchboard, so we know that you want to be brought onto the show to contribute. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's get rolling with phone calls. We're going to begin with area code 843. 843, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Joseph from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Joseph, thanks for calling. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was pretty good, probably one of the best ones in the last couple of weeks. For the wild card, the Joker, I did think Asena might show up for the women, but sadly she didn't, which I'm kind of sad about that.
She was definitely a top speculated. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But Takeshita, he was fantastic. I've enjoyed him in DDT. Oh. I was wondering if you guys think, with good of a showing as he had tonight, when his contract is up with DDT, if you think AEW might be trying to get in on him.
I say yes. I was really impressed, not only with his moves, but his ring presence, his size, owning the ring. He looked like somebody that AEW could build significantly around as a personality, but also just a world-class athlete. Tyler, what'd you think of this match? Credit to Hangman Page too for doing his part and getting a bloody nose and as a world champion, giving that much to, you know, the new guy in AEW, obviously very new in AEW.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. If he's available, you know, you got to do what you got to do if you're WWE, AEW, anybody to get this guy, because he is, he translates, and it's not, you know, even 10 years ago, if you look at, you know, Okada in Impact and how he was used and how he didn't translate at that time. I think it's just, you know, totally a different type of audience consuming wrestling on a more broader sense. So, yeah, I mean, he doesn't need anything but what he is right now. And obviously getting in the ring and work rate can get him at the top of the mountain. And, you know, you give him a mouthpiece, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, and I'm glad that the initial comment tonight was not that, Hangman gave too much to this guy that we don't know. So I think that's also a maturing, at least with our audience here. So I'm happy to hear that, cause I was really worried about that, cause I love this match. I thought it was amazing and, showed, you know, Hangman obviously has the chops, but it felt like he fit in it within AEW and, didn't feel as much like some of the New Japan guys that are established feel a little bit, you know, like they're on the tour in the United States and just doing their stop. And it hasn't felt like that so far with his match with Paige and Jay Lethal so far. So I think he'd be a great addition and could be one of those young guys you built around as a non-WWE veteran. So, yeah, I think thumbs up all the way if you can find him.
If that was J.D. Drake and Hangman gave him that much, yes, Hangman would have given him too much. But when you have someone who, you know, you believe in and can shine like that and I just think make a really good impression. Should they have done more to build him up ahead of time? I mean, yes. I mean, I think you could build to this, but it's almost like, I don't want to overstate it or overcompare, but it's like the John Cena, Kurt Angle moment. It's like, whoa, you know, like, are we going to remember this? And I think this match has potential to have that sort of vibe and that place in history, depending on, you know, the direction they both go from here. You know, Hangman Page in terms of staying as a top guy and world champion, and I think he'll stay a top guy. But that was just a really nice showing. Anyway, yeah, Joseph, back to you.
Yeah, I just can't wait to hear from the people that were in the building to see how the reaction to him was, because I know a lot of people that were there probably don't watch Dark and Elevation, so haven't really seen him that much. So I want to hear what people in the arena were like.
And Tyler, what did you get a sense of how the fans reacted to him? I mean, we're often surprised by how much audiences know and react to certain talents, and other times it's like, whoa, they didn't react as much as I think a, quote, AEW smart audience would.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of his entrance more than anything, because, I mean, the match itself, it didn't matter who it was. If it was two guys with paper bags on their head and you didn't know who they were and they were having a match like that, I think that crowd was going to react that way. But, you know, I think if I had to guess, you know, going back, I'm trying to think of it, I can't remember it, so it must have been pretty tepid for his entrance. I mean, you know, Hangman's entrance obviously takes a lot of oxygen out of any arena, and then Punk right before it, so I had to have, you know, 3 inches is there. But yeah, I mean, I think the crowd tonight in Houston was pretty smart, if you will. They were very in on lots of stuff. So I would like to see maybe that match in 5 different cities to give you a good answer. But I think it was pretty well enjoyed, but that crowd was pretty specific to liking a match like that, if I were to guess.
Yep. Yep. All right. Cool. What else for us, Joseph?
That'll be it. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate the show.
Great. Thanks, Joseph. Appreciate it. All right.
Yep.
Let's go next to Hinton in London, Ontario. Hinton, good to hear from you. What's good on Dynamite for you tonight?
Hey, I almost said, hey, Zach. Sorry. Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. How you guys doing?
Hey.
I want to follow up on the Takeshita conversation. So this guy, he main evented Rampage, which is when the first time I ever saw him. And when I saw him, I'm like, wait, who's this guy? And the only thing of substance he had to say, it was like the Mark Henry interview, and he's like, I'm not afraid of you. And that's the only thing he said. And I thought it was really underwhelming. The match performance was good, but, you know, we don't know if he's a heel or a babyface. He faced Jay Lethal, and then now he's facing Hangman Page. And so I know you talked about AEW's large roster, but Takeshita isn't even signed to AEW, right? So should he have gotten a Rampage main event and a match tonight at the expense of signed talent? You compared him to Cena Angle, but at least Cena was signed. And do you think that his performances, which I agree have been good, do you think his performances have outweighed the fact that he, again, he's taken a Rampage main event slot and a Dynamite match at the expense of signed talent?
You know, I think how spectacular he looked added to the show, and part of AEW's identity, their DNA, their brand that they sell to fans is being more international and sort of more inclusive of great athletes from around the world who aren't necessarily, and I'm trying to say this neutrally, you know, aren't established as talkers or personalities that fans know how to react to. And it just is part of the DNA and the brand of what AEW markets. So we can debate whether there's a better way to do it or whether it's even the most optimal way to do it, but it is their brand, and he fits that. And I mean, this is a guy in his, you know, mid-20s who's not a household name even among people who are New Japan fans, and he shined. And I think he's sort of, if he's not available or doesn't sign with AEW, Tyler, did AEW spend or give too much time to getting people excited about someone who's talented who might not appear regularly or full time for them? Your thoughts on Hinton's point.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because we don't know what's going to happen. I would say, you know, right now they're giving him this opportunity because obviously they, you know, I'm treating this like a top prospect in maybe baseball or hockey, right? Where you sign a guy and you might not see him for a couple of years. And you hope that, you know, it can be a starting pitcher or, you know, a top line center or something like that. And that's kind of the way I view the way they are treating this. And if, you know, if he re-signs with DDT or, you know, doesn't sign with AEW, then I'm going to view it as, you know, it was Tony Khan making a pitch to him like, hey, I'm going to use you well. You're not going to be buried here. You're going to be a top guy if you sign here and, you know, move, you know, to America. So that's the way I view it. It's Tony Khan wanting this guy really bad and proving to him that this is what you can be if you come overseas to AEW and I'm going to, you know, treat you right. So it's just more of a an interview process right now, and they're trying to wine and dine him. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it does work and he's a big star, I think it was all worth it. So as opposed to having, you know, I'm Frank Kazarian just got a Rampage main event as well. And that was good, but I think long-term, if it does work, it's better off to take a chance and put, you know, a guy like this in the spot as opposed to a guy like Frankie Kazarian as one example.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously I am on record as being a fan of having a strong enough personalities established with the talent that you choose to feature on television, where fans have a distinct emotional reaction to them. That does involve, like with all of sports and team sports and often MMA and boxing, you're rooting for one person over the other. And I think it's best if you have a distinct and consistent feeling about somebody that leads to you feeling happy or disappointed with their success as you get wrapped up in the story of their ascension or setbacks. There are times where you've got your world title challenger on color commentary, you're the world champion, and you want to have a really good competitive match against a young up-and-comer who isn't established in any way as a personality yet, but you just want to show that you're willing to take on somebody young who has a chance to beat you, who has some acclaim, and win and have a hard-fought battle, and it's framed by Punk and the announcers as reps, as a warm-up match, staying sharp. And Punk did it against John Silver, and now and here Hangman's doing it this week. I mean, I think this worked in this situation. But Hinton, I know what you're saying. It's like, if you're going to have that much time and have that competitive of a match, shouldn't we know a little bit more about him? I think this is just an exception to that. What I think is a sensible rule, which is getting people emotionally invested in what they're watching, especially your babyface world champion. I'm more concerned. I don't know if concern's a word, but like I'm more concerned about Hangman's promo a couple weeks ago and why he just kind of suddenly became sort of a prick, and now that's just sort of been dropped and the fans are sort of cheering for Punk. But to me, like, I'm much more concerned about the fact that all they've done is generically told a story that CM Punk and Hangman Page are staring at each other really intensely. Like, that's the backstory of this match. There's way more they could be telling. I mean, they could be telling the story of Hangman Page being a champion who's still trying to prove himself that he belongs on the list of prior AEW world champions in terms of big title defenses against big names, and tell this, just, you know, AEW is willing to speak the truth. Say, there are fans who really like Hangman Page, but they're not sure yet, despite some amazing matches, that he has established himself as an elite world champion, and the Punk match is the key, if Hangman wins, to winning over a lot of fans who just aren't sold that this is the title reign that they and Hangman were hoping for. And then you tell the Punk story, which is a little more self-evident, but still tell it, you know, which is Punk says he's ready, says he feels sharp, says he feels warmed up after nearly a year back, but does he still have the fastball? Or is the, you know, curveball and slider, and, you know, is he bringing something different? Now you got me thinking baseball, Tyler. does he bring other things that veterans bring? And is Punk going to be a half a step slower than he realizes against a younger world champion in Hangman Page who he hasn't faced? It's just like there's a sports-like story to tell. That doesn't mean AEW has to steer you towards liking or disliking either of them. I think there's a chance that older fans are going to root for Punk, and younger kind of pure AEW fans would then root for Hangman, even if they still like Hangman and they still like Punk. And we are not getting that. I don't, you know, like, strongly dislike the hype. I just think it's sort of phoned in and generic. And I think there was more of a story to tell here of a guy in his late 20s versus a guy in his early 40s at a crossroads establishing themselves. And so to me, that's more of an issue coming out of this show than the fact that we didn't know a lot about I have practiced saying his name, and I am so content. Takeshita, yes. Tyler, do you want to respond to that, and I'll throw back in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, you know, of a wider AEW concern, and, you know, I've said it a lot. If people haven't heard my voice in a long time, I think just a vast majority of AEW world title programs have been poor from a storyline perspective. have been pretty good in the ring or to great in the ring. So I think this follows the trajectory, unfortunately, within AEW, and especially with, you know, the Hangman Page run, great in-ring matches and pretty subpar stories. And I mean, I would say like phoned in is being pretty generous on this. If I can latch on, it just literally was like, hey, this match is happening. And that's kind of how I felt the last 3 or 4 weeks of like, hey, this match is happening. It's going to be awesome, isn't it? And that's basically the build to the match. So, I mean, there's just like almost no attempt to tell a story, in my opinion, between, you know, obviously what you laid out there, Wade, is pretty obvious and could be pretty juicy and intense and could, you know, talk about Punk being the guy. I mean, Punk and Page are so similar in their respective companies where, you know, Punk was the champion and didn't get any respect and the stories weren't good and mm-hmm. he was never main eventing. And like, it's just so much there. And it's just like frustrating that it's not even dealt with. And yeah, to try to switch Page to maybe the bad guy and then that being a colossal failure and then kind of not doing anything after it didn't work is it's concerning, but I think that's kind of the world title picture. And if, you know, Punk wins, not to get ahead too much, I think hopefully we'll get a stronger story with a strong character in CM Punk, strong established character, I should say.
Yeah. Another thing I think AEW doesn't, one thing they could have done in this situation too, because I think it just is ready-made for it, custom-built for it, this type of matches, interview fans in the concourse before Rampage or coming into the building and go, Hangman, Punk, coming up later this month, who do you think is going to win? Who are you rooting for and why? Interview 25 people and use six of them, you know? And, you know, you're going to – and find, you know, one, I just think they should talk more to fans and find ways to kind of get the fans are such a big part of AEW's brand. You know, I think they should be showing them walking into the building. They should show them, you know, like during NHL and NBA games, they show the concourse, you know, between periods. And I think they should do more to show you the atmosphere of what it's like at an AEW show and the energy in the building instead of just panning the crowd at the beginning during the Ross intro. And then they, you know, it's just they're a backdrop. And this is a perfect chance to like just hear from the fans because they're going to tell a better – they're going to tell a story as well or better than anything in this no disrespect that Excalibur, Shivani, and Ross can do. So I'd be, and there's still time, just sticking a mic in fans' faces arriving at the building and let the fans tell the story because what I laid out, I think the fans are going to lay out naturally, and it's just a matter of then editing it.
Mm.
Hint back to you.
You said some really great things there, and I think WWE's done that on a couple of occasions. They did that with Vince McMahon and Donald Trump, of all people. They did that with celebrities as well as that. They did it with John Cena and Triple H, I think, for the WrestleMania main event, and it's like, no, that's perfect. I would say, and so Wade, you've raised this point before, when CM Punk was feuding with Eddie Kingston, there was a minimalist story to it, and I think you took some issue with it, and I think Todd Martin gave you heat for it, and then this emailer did as well. But it's like, and even after that pay-per-view in the post-fight conference, he's like, yeah, sometimes two people don't like each other and they fight. They don't need a story. I think CM Punk's philosophy on wrestling is a little different than yours and mine in that he doesn't see a need for needless padding on story when it's just two people who, you know, the audience knows that are going to fight for a championship. And it's not, you know, Hangman Page, someone who, you know, is somewhat admittedly anxious. He's not going to, you know, for political reasons, he's probably not going to go to Punk and say, hey, Punk, you know, we need a bit more story. We need a bit more juice to our rivalry. And if Tony Khan says it, Punk will be like, well, why don't I go back to WWE where they force storylines upon people, right? Do you think that might be going on just like this philosophy that CM Punk has of minimalist storytelling?
I think some of the things that I'm mentioning are things that Punk has just brought up naturally in commentary and promos. So I think it's more about amplifying or focusing on and amplifying things that are out there. I think with Hangman, his push has been quite unimaginative and just it doesn't feel well thought out. I mean, the promo a couple weeks ago being sort of a prick out of nowhere. I am fascinated by Hangman Page's personality and the journey that he's been on in AEW. And I just feel like no one's putting thought into it during the week coming into Dynamite. Like I think fans have been the Hangman. I was talking about wrestlers on journeys. Hangman has been on a journey from the beginning of AEW, from coming up short on the world title match or, you know, becoming the first champion. And they own that history and the fans have experienced it. I want to see them do especially more with Hangman. And this isn't about, like, you know, forcing a story or wedging a story into something. It's just about amplifying what's self-apparent and there that the fans have been watching instead of sort of ignoring it.
Yeah, I just think that Punk might see it as wedging a story in there.
Well, screw him.
I don't know if Tyler had anything to add on to that before I move on to something.
I figured I had to come back there, and so I didn't want to jump in on it. But I think the Punk it's with Punk stories, you know, the last three, you know, he's got the Kingston thing and he's got the real long story with MJF. That was the exact opposite of the Kingston and Page builds, right? And I just think of AEW as a place where you can tell who Tony Khan trusts to give TV time and talking segments and who really works on their character, right? If you look at tonight, and the main talking segments are, you know, MJF's and Jericho's, right? Those are guys that he trusts to do long segments where they're talking and, you know, bouncing off of people, right? So if Punk is taking on Jericho, I'm going to assume that there's going to be a lot of story and a lot of thought and a lot of stuff that Wade brought up and that I brought up is going to be built into that feud. And that is a combination of those people being confident in doing that in front of a live crowd and Tony Khan being confident it'll be successful in giving them the TV time to do it. And that's just, you know, I think Kingston and Page are not those guys to streamline and be the guys to come up with long-term stories between them and someone else. And it just is evident there. And it's, you know, talent is still, to me, a lot more in control of their stories long-term and how they're presented in the segment time they get. They got to prove it to Tony Khan, but they also have to work on their craft. So I think it's a combination of both. And to me, it just feels like Tony Khan knows what works with Hangman, and he's going to kind of keep writing that until he has to not. He's not going to take a chance to do a talking segment that might fall flat on his face, and he wants to maintain, hey, this is going to be a good match, and not chance it because he doesn't trust him necessarily to bring it on the mic in a segment against Punk, which, is valid as well. But I think that's kind of what's going on.
And I think Tony's leaning is to have things that happen. I mean, trying to think if we've had an episode of Dynamite with less of anything that wasn't a camera pointed at the ring. Like, I mean, I like pizzazz and elbow grease and production, you know, vignettes and stuff, but this was very much like point the camera at the ring for a couple talking segments and then all the matches. There wasn't this break of let's do a sit down interview or let's tell a story with a video. Some of my favorite Dynamites are this style, as long as it's mixed up with some of my other favorites, which are the ones where in the pandemic era, where they post-produced the shows. And really, I mean, and I know, you know, I one time talked to Tony about one of the shows he did during the pandemic, and he was like, I've watched this show, I can't remember, like 6 or 7 or 10 times before it aired and tweaked it and edited and all that. And, you can't really realistically do that. Well, you can't do it with a live show, but even if it was pre-taped, you can't do it every week. But during the pandemic, there was this, you know, they tape go live and then they tape a show afterwards. And the post-production work and the storytelling was better because they had time to do it. But I think Tony is – so if he has time, he can do that and has done it. It's just not practical with a live crowd to do it. But that said, the week before your pay-per-view, I almost, you know, I think you want to sacrifice a little bit of the, we're so scared people are going to tune out if we're not showing them something live that's exciting. And I think that he has to trust his audience to stick around for really hammering home the emotions. Now, I think the buy rate's going to do well, but I don't want them to talk themselves into thinking the buy rate is inevitable in that they can't bring more people in to spend that money by trusting Hangman or working with him to do something, even if that means it's pre-produced. Hint back to you.
Yeah, good points, guys. I'll move on to my next topic here, which is the Deep segment, which ironically built off of a video that was shown last week, which I'm sure everyone forgot about when she brought it up. So I think, you know, I like that last week's video package was spotlighted by Deep because it's easy to just snooze through it, fans, and considering how packed the shows tend to be, it's easy to forget about it in 10 minutes as well. I think it would have been better if Dustin's coaching influence on Rosa was more of a thing on TV, but, you know, nonetheless, it's fine. I'm not sure about Dee bringing up her dealings with misogyny as a heel, but, you know, the story of a villain who's overcompensating for past legitimate injustices isn't new, and I think they pulled it off well here. My main concern is that once Deeb loses, she's going to continue to disappear from television while, you know, while she's arguably doing better work than anyone else in the women's division. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Tyler, what'd you think of that? Because there, I mean, yes, Deeb was heavy-handed and mean to a sympathetic figure in Dustin, but, you know, some of the stuff that she's been through, you're starting, it does kind of, you start going, yeah, I'm kind of rooting for you to have a good moment.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, I like the idea of the segments. Obviously, Deeb bringing up her past and what she had to do, and, you know, she's in a different, you know, different ages, you know, especially compared to Thunder Rosa, who's only been doing it for a few years now and hasn't had to deal with the sort of politicking that Deeb had to. So I like all that. It felt like a kind of a reverse engineered villain origin story that you can kind of understand where they're coming from. And obviously, you know, she's not the villain in her eyes. She's trying to prove everyone wrong. But I just thought the delivery of the entire segment all the way around, obviously being rushed as the show was long, and Tony, you know, at the very beginning is already missing words. And, you know, I think Deeb had all her stuff memorized, and just the delivery was spotty and spots, and Dustin being there didn't really work for me, just standing there and, you know, kind of contrived at the end. So again, I liked it on paper, but I thought the execution of the segment by almost everyone involved was pretty poor. So I think that hurt it. And this of all the world of all the championship feuds, for sure, this just feels stop and start. Like, I feel like it's been 6 weeks. I know it hasn't, but since we had the promo back and forth with Thunder Rosa and Deeb on the top of the stage, that didn't go very well either. So I think this feud kind of needs to get over with and just start fresh for both of them, unfortunately.
All right, Hinton, anything else you want to respond to or add?
Yeah, my final question concerns the rumor that FTR is going to team with Flair. Just considering how hot of a run FTR has been on, are they taking their nostalgia a little bit too far if this does happen and if the rumors are true? And should they have some self-respect to say no to teaming with this guy?
I have mixed feelings about just the whole thing of Ric Flair coming back to the ring. You know, mostly negative but not entirely negative, you know, for reasons I've talked about on a podcast earlier this week with Rich Fan in particular and Jason too. I don't know. I mean, FTR having a chance to team with Ric Flair, I don't see that as like leaning too hard into nostalgia. If they're comfortable with that, or it's just a good payday, it adds to their brand. It is to team with Ric Flair if you're FTR is, you know, pretty damn cool. If you haven't lost your sort of, you know, if you don't think Ric Flair's lost the aura that he once had because of, you know, just certain behaviors and whatever, I don't know. Ric Flair's very complicated because he was so good. You can absolutely make a case he's the greatest of all time. So many wrestlers had the best match they ever had during his prime against him, and his charisma and his promos and his heel work, just so good. But he's in his 70s, and I don't trust, you know, I don't trust him to do the right thing to get in shape and not to go too far in the match. And so our FTR there to buffer and help prevent Rick from doing something if that match turned out to play out like is rumored, or are they exploiting something, you know, for their own gain and people should, you know, might look down on them for participating in a farce or something that could even be dangerous to the health of somebody who has, you know, been very close to death before. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you as well. I think it's very complicated and it's hard to say like what someone should or shouldn't do, you know, within the business if they're able to, right? They're in WWE, obviously they couldn't do this at this show. But I think, you know, it's just the crowd that's going to be watching that match and the people that are going to pay for the show are definitely behind it, or at least morbidly curious about what's happening. So there's that. And then, you know, there's almost certainly going to be a Four Horsemen reunion at the StarCast event. So I assume there'll be something in the match, and I just assume that would be too much for FTR to pass up if they can get a moment in the ring with the Four Horsemen. That just seems too on brand for them. So, you know, would I do it? Probably not, but I also haven't made like half my career being nostalgic for that era of wrestling either, like FTR has. So,
right.
It's like a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of thing for them, I would say. So I think it's probably going to happen, and people that like it will remember it, and people that don't, it'll probably be a footnote. And, you know, they'll still be awesome, FTR, that is, and be doing great work. So that's just kind of the way I view it.
All right, Hinton, anything else you want to close with?
No, that's all. Tyler, I like the setup you got there in your house on the YouTube stuff. I like the SmackDown, the classic SmackDown games, and the hemp belt especially. So everyone check that out, and go VIP. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Hinton. Great hearing from you. All right. Our number, if you want to join the show, is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to be on the show. We've got Larry in Beardstown, Illinois, coming up. But first, area code 218. You are up right now. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 281. This is you.
Oh,
did I say 218? 281.
Okay. Hey, this is Andy from Houston, Texas.
Hey, Andy. I was hoping to hear from you. How you doing?
Doing great. I dropped off my friend from the Dynamite showing. We went and we saw the main Dynamite show, so we skipped Dark Elevation and Rampage here. I didn't know if you had any live correspondence yet.
No, nobody actually let us know they were going tonight, so you are it. Although if anyone's listening now and wants to call in, you can follow up Andy's report, especially if you saw some of the other stuff. But yeah, Andy, talk about the show.
It was pretty good. So the stadium was, our Fertitta Stadium was 95-98% capacity. So it was a pretty full crowd. So considering it wasn't something like Reliance Stadium, it felt like a much more close-knit crowd. Because there are fewer people, but you could definitely hear the crowd when things were roaring inside. I will say, though, that the production for AEW shows doesn't match anything, at least in-stadium, to WWE when it comes to things like the monitors at the sides of the stadium or just the way the people are mic'd inside, the speakers playing entrance, all of that, it's just not of the same caliber, I would say.
Yeah.
So anytime we have a backstage segment, you can barely hear anything that's being said, so you just kind of have to go by facial expressions to intuit what's going on. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, we've heard from people who said sometimes the videos play that are on the show and other times they don't, and it's kind of hard to come up with a rhyme or reason for it. Did you sense like it's not just, you know, lower budget? WWE is like, you know, a higher-end production, but AEW's sort of brand is, hey, it's what matters is what's under the spotlights in the middle of the arena, not, you know, all the other stuff and, you know, fancy turnbuckles and ringside barricades with all kinds of branding and all that. That's not their thing, and part of it is budget, part of it is identity. But are there things that didn't impress you that you think were easily fixable or could be done just, you know, differently with what they have? Like, are you at that level of sort of thinking, not that it's minor league, but that there's just some fixable things for the live experience, or is that aspect not particularly important?
Oh, I think the live experience is critical for any real growth with AEW's fandom, because WWE has prided itself on the live experience for so long that once you've been to a show like that, you know, anything else feels like it's, you know, like an independent show or, you know, just Bush League by comparison. But for AEW, I think the main focus they need is just basically, it's all audio-visual. Just have more visibility of what's going on in the ring for people around the stage, so they don't always because we don't always have a vantage point for what's happening for any of those spots outside of the ring, especially when they happen on the opposite side of where you're sitting. And then just being able to hear the wrestlers, like MJF said a lot of things, but I didn't hear a damn word.
Wow, that's not good. Yeah.
But, you know, I would say part of that is probably because he got booed out of the building. MJF, his heat was so atomic, like there was a huge dip between him and the next heel in terms of just boos from the crowd. I mean, it is, if Tony doesn't find a way to keep him on the roster, then, you know, he's just not as business savvy as I would take him for. You can't not hold on to a generational talent like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think Tony doesn't want him. I think it, yeah. If everything is what is being reported at face value, it seems like it's more than Tony doesn't want him or won't ante up to pay him. There's some other things going on that I've talked quite a bit about and written about. I did some reporting on that in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter too, so VIP members can read my write up on that in the Newswire. Andy, so you're talking about MJF getting nuclear heel heat. Talk about who seemed like the biggest stars of the night. In terms of on the babyface side of things, I assume CM Punk is at the top of that list. Who else?
Oh, yes.
Was there anyone above him?
Yeah, definitely. So if we were ranking them in tiers, CM Punk is at the tip top. And then I would say right below him, but, you know, cheers almost as loud, would basically be Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley. And even Eddie Kingston, when he was out there and they were cheering for Eddie. Now, there was a comparable pop later on, but I don't know if it would have been at that level if it hadn't been a rescue attempt by Darby Allin and Sting. Like, that was pretty big at the end of the night. But it's basically all the ex-WWE superstars that are taking top billing for, you know, crowd support, what it feels like.
Tyler, jump in with a question for Andy.
Yeah, on the babyface front, I'm curious, too. I mean, you talked about MJF at the top. I was curious what you thought of Wardlow's reaction there live in person, obviously bouncing off the obvious number one heel in the company. And does he feel like he would be in that tier below all those baby faces that you mentioned? Would he be the top quote unquote AEW guy, or is he somewhere, you know, below Adam Page and below Jungle Boy, things like that? You know, what was your opinion of him tonight coming out there?
I would actually put him on par with Adam Page and maybe even a little higher up. If he comes out on top of his feud with MJF, I think they could have something really special on their hands. I just don't know that right now. He's still an unknown quantity in terms of how he would pair off against, you know, other faces or other heels. And I also don't know what level of vulnerability he should have against him. If, you know, he needs to be kind of like this monster attraction of a face who no-sells everything, or, you know, if he goes the route of, say, a Batista, where, you know, he kind of goes out of his way to try and, you know, sell for his opponents to make it seem like more of a back and forth and not just, you know, a squash every time.
Cool. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you guys just reminded me of a point I wanted to make about Adam Page. I feel like CM Punk should be a shoe-in to become the new champion, just because when CM Punk came out and, you know, with his entrance, everybody was on their feet. When Adam Page came out, like maybe half of the audience was on their feet and cheering. Yeah, there were heavy cheers for him, you know, maybe slightly below Danielson and Moxley, but it still wasn't at the same level. And when people are chanting cowboy shit more than they are Adam Page or Hangman, I feel like they're not latching on to his identity so much as they are like his catchphrase or just, you know, some aspect of him that I feel like there's just not the same level of buy-in to the whole of his character like there is for someone like CM Punk, who is just head over shoulders above just about anybody there.
Andy, talk about Kushida's response coming out and as the match built. And if there was a, did you sense, I don't want to like lead you, have too much of a leading question, but was there any sense that the crowd was like kind of getting behind Kushida to the point that like they were rooting for him to beat Hangman?
Well, part of the problem to me was that at one point, it seemed like the same people were rooting for Hangman that were rooting for CM Punk. I think ultimately people want Punk at the top, but it seems like there's a lot of mixed feelings as to who they need to primarily support. Like, they can't just cheer for both people. They have to cheer for one and boo the other. Because I did hear some, like, you know, deep voice mixed boos at one point where Punk was facing off against Paige after his match with, Kanosuke?
Kushida.
Say again?
Kushida.
Kushida. Thank you.
Did I do that?
Yeah,
Tyler, are you with me on that?
I'm as worried about pronunciation of his name as you are. So I usually take some time to watch to get. I want to make sure I get everyone's name right. So yeah,
Kanosuke Takeshita. That's like
I think that's right. Takeshita. I think it's the closest pronunciation that we can get to. I guess.
KT,
as we call it, the cool kids call him KT.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Todd could correct us with the pronunciation.
I was counting on Todd Martin to do that last week. He goes, I don't even know. I think it should be Takeshita. So, or something along those lines. So, yeah, Todd was not agreeing with the pronunciation of AEW, and it wasn't polished with him yet. So, But anyway, I don't want to overdo our struggles to master the pronunciation. I'm not sure Ross said his name once on the broadcast either. I should say that. I don't know either way. But
he said something else, but we can leave that
there. Sure. But Andy, I guess my point is, and maybe you answered it in the midst of kind of the other things that you brought up, which were interesting, but were the fans into him? And because maybe that's where it hit it anyway, into KT. Were the fans into him as the match progressed even more so?
Well, there was definitely support for KT, though I think that it was kind of a foregone conclusion that Hangman would win. And there's definitely crowd support for Hangman, but it just feels like when you pair that up against the support that the fans give almost unilaterally to certain other wrestlers on the roster, I don't know how it is that that AEW can portray him as being the champion. When it feels like your champion is second or third tier to other stars on the roster, I feel like that means you have a problem when it comes to both portraying the importance of the world championship title and also like how does it actually elevate the person holding it? Because it feels like the AEW is so young that you need the strongest stars possible to build the prestige of the championship before you can start giving it to others as building them as a champion rather than the other way around. I mean, I know that was a problem in WWE when it came to the championship split and the Universal Championship needing to get some prestige built into it, and where Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar essentially carried that. And so now it almost seems like a more important title than the old school WWE title.
Tyler, it feels to me that CM Punk is going to win the title, and most people think CM Punk is going to win the title, and AEW isn't really even trying to change people's minds on that. I don't want to say that TK has already moved on from, not to be confused with KT, Tony Khan has moved on from Hangman. Like, I don't sense like this passion for investing and building around him and getting him over and getting the world title over. And I think when you, if he is gun shy or not excited about Hangman right now, that can drag down the world title. If that has happened, I mean, get it on Punk. And if I would be for Tony Khan experimenting, he's had 2 weeks in a row averaging under 900,000 viewers on Dynamite. If I'm TK, I'm thinking we need a disruptor. We need something that's going to see if we can get viewership up, and making the show more about your world champion, CM Punk, the biggest name on your roster, with all due respect to Bryan Danielson. I think just start telling the CM Punk story and lean hard into it, and, you know, make him not necessarily to the degree that Roman Reigns is the centerpiece, you know, sun around which all the planets revolve, guy on SmackDown, but not that far off, and see if that makes a difference, because hundreds of thousands more people tuned in to see CM Punk's debut match on Rampage. There are people out there who know, who are reachable and know he's in AEW, who are not watching. Spend 3-4 months making the show about him and see if you can't build on that, and then utilize that to then help him elevate 2 or 3 other guys in that 3-4 month period, and see if you can't then build on that and start working on the second million again, instead of just trying to get the first million solidified, which is kind of where they are right now. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. You know, I think the peak AEW stuff in the past year has been Punk and MJF and their story that they told. And they're obviously the top face, top heel in the company, so that makes sense, right? If it's not, then that'd probably be a problem. But yeah, I mean, it seems so obvious, and I think that's kind of why everything has felt very like, hey, here's the match. It's going to be awesome. And that's the whole build, because it feels, you know, for people that are just absolute diehard Adam Page fans, they can feel like, okay, he beat Cole, he beat Danielson, he was champion for X amount of time, and he had this many defenses, and he's going to lose to Punk. So it all feels like, hey, that was a good run. So they're happy. I think that's partially why you know, Cole was kind of sacrificed to do that. And I don't think he's been elevated to be a world champion within AEW since he's been there. But yeah, I mean, it just makes so much sense from a business perspective that it seems almost impossible that it wouldn't happen. And then when you start getting into that zone within wrestling, that always concerns me a little bit to see things that are so obvious that, you know, they may or may not happen. But I would be absolutely shocked if Punk did not win the title, if Page did win this title. I mean, that's about the most aggressive move that Tony Khan could do, I think, in his entire 3-year run of owning AEW from a in-ring perspective. Mm-hmm. And it'd be doubling down on his guy. And I'd be here and interested for that story as a you know, viewer from the beginning. But I don't know if that makes business sense either. But if he were to have the cojones to do that, I'd be here for it, and I'd be excited for the conversation. And I'd want to make sure you Eric Kroll on the post show if that happens.
Andy, from an in-arena perspective, what was the low point of the show for you?
The low point?
Yeah.
If I'm honest, seeing Britt Baker wrestle whatever the Joker's Wild is supposed to be and having no idea who that is and feeling as if it was a big letdown, like why not Taya Valkyrie or why not Athena, somebody who has more notoriety and can get more of the surprise. You know, we got Johnny Elite for the opening match, so why not his wife? Athena trained with Booker T in the PWA over 10 years ago. So, you know, she's known to the Houston audience. So it just feels like there were choices that could be made that would have, I think, piqued more crowd interest, but yeah, I understand there needs to be some level of crossover appeal to market Forbidden Door and your Japanese talent and all of that. But you know, at least for the the in-crowd experience, it just didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, interesting. I'm not, you know, it was a weird card to play as the Joker, I guess, pun intended. Did the crowd seem let down by how brief the Jeff Hardy Adam Cole match was? Were people talk watching it kind of new?
I don't know. Like, I had completely forgotten that Hardy and Cole were supposed to wrestle at the end of the night. There were no indications. Justin Roberts didn't try to pump people up for that main event. He said main event, but he didn't say who the wrestlers were, and I figure you want to grab people's attention and remind them of what the hell is happening, you know, from something that develops at the very start of the show, you know, that's supposed to happen at the end of the show. And it is definitely something that they need to do better for the live experiences, to actually let people know what's coming next, if it's not supposed to be a surprise, if it's something they need to gear up for, to, you know, start cheering for specific wrestlers. And it doesn't seem that had that that knowledge or capability yet.
Tyler, I watching TV, I talked about Cole and Hardy this week. I thought about Cole and Hardy this week. By an hour 45 minutes into Dynamite, I forgot about Cole and Hardy. Like, when they, like, oh, we're going to come back with them, I'm like, oh, that's right, that's the main event. Like, they do not do a good job. They do a poor job of utilizing their TV time to get you excited and build anticipation for what the final match on their TV shows is. And I think it's inexcusable. I think it's an unforced error in terms of retaining viewers and then just making people think when the main event happens, this is a big deal and it's something really exciting. It's interesting that Andy in the building, you know, they weren't hyping it there, but on TV, they didn't take time to get you excited about it either. And this is part of a pattern. I know there's some people who philosophically disagree, and I disagree with them. It's not all about you who's memorized the card. I'm watching this thinking, not only if I'm forgetting, I think about that average viewer out there who isn't spending an hour and a half anticipating a main event and being excited about it. I've loaded up this with my opinion, Tyler. What did you think? And what do you think in general about their practice here?
Yeah. So here's what I think. It's going to sound half joking, but I'm pretty serious when I say this. And I think, I don't know what it is, but I think Tony Khan is subliminally given up on timing this, you know, timing Dynamites out to have a main event that is more than 9 minutes long, because that's kind of what I was alluding to at the top of the show here with critiques of things that were not in the ring tonight. And it's just like week after week after week where you just know, hey, your main event's, you know, got 10 minutes and you know you have a commercial break in the middle, so you're barely going to have a match. And it seems to me like Tony Khan's philosophy is, you know, every match could be a main event, so there is no true main event. Almost, you know, if 40 out of 52 Dynamites, that's kind of the setup, which is, you know, has merits for a certain, you know, 900,000 person segment of the audience, which is working for that group of people. But yeah, not growing because you're not going to anything. But it almost seems like, you know, again, it's subliminal, but Tony Khan knows that the main event is going to kind of suck because it's going to be 8 minutes long. So don't build to it because you're going to get into a, you know, not a WWE where you have like a 20 minute time frame, but you have a non-finish that upsets everyone. But you're going to have if you built to Adam Cole and Jeff Hardy and made it feel important, and then you literally had 4 minutes of full screen action, I would be pretty disappointed as a viewer. So I think they need to clean up and make sure that the main event has, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and then you can build to that. But if they can't even time the show out week in and week out, I see that as a bigger problem than trying to hype the show, because it's just way too much going on. And if you dropped one or two segments and focused on the main event in those drop segments, I think that would be the solution to all these problems that we're talking about here.
Andy, back to you. Is there anything else you want to share from your in-arena experience before we shift to some of our other callers on hold?
Just one thing that I was thinking of. The the entrance of the Blackpool Combat Club and Eddie Kingston and Santana and Ortiz came out of nowhere. There was no visual indications or no video packages or anything to let us know that it was happening. So when they were out there, when they finally got out there and then the Jericho Appreciation Society was out there, the only thing I could think of is, why the hell are these two groups out there talking to each other? You know, that how is this there? Were they set up for a match and the match didn't happen? It was like, I had no context from an in-person perspective of why they would even be out in the ring. And that's the only thing I wanted to mention from my end.
Yeah. 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 Interesting. I mean, it is good to get your perspective, because I think AEW is not clearly thinking about people like you when they promote their TV shows and live events, and they're doing quite well not doing that. I wonder if they would do better with, and there would be no sacrifice. This wouldn't, they wouldn't drive anybody away if they did more to not cater to, but incorporate into their thoughts and game plan somebody who's watching a show through the lens that you are and noticing the things that you notice and feeling left out of certain things or just sort of nonplussed, you know, and or confused about things. So, yeah, I mean, AEW has room to improve. It's you know, people who go tend to love being at AEW, and they're selling out buildings and making money, you know, for a lot of wrestlers are making a living. And I mean, there's a lot of good things, obviously, and great things about AEW and great things on tonight's show. But that doesn't mean there isn't a checklist of the things that they could pretty easily do, I think, to improve their standing with a whole other layer of the fan base that I think would lap up the strengths if AEW did a little bit more to make it a little more palatable, a little more, I don't know, just lay the red carpet out for a different type of fan a little bit more. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know if I'm just spoiled by WWE's video productions, because I guess there's usually some kind of backdrop video that gets played that lets you know sort of what came before, or, you know, the gives you a context as the scene that they're about to play out. And, you know, as much as I don't have much interest in WWE booking or content right now, I think that would be of great benefit for the crowd that in attendance to have those kind of indicators. And I think that would be a tremendous boost, and I don't think it would require much effort, but I'm not a producer, so I don't know.
Well, and I think, yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to, is it just wouldn't take a lot of effort to do it. And you would hope that's in the budget. And if it's not, I would, you know, sorry, I'd cut four wrestlers who are making, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 a year and hire one or two people to make that happen every week. Anyway, yeah, Tyler, any closing question or anything for Andy before we move on here?
No, I think I'm good.
Cool. All right, Andy, thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Yep. I think perspectives like Andy's are really important. You know, I mean, I think any AEW fan should want AEW to grow. It's going to make them more competitive, and it's going to assure that they're going to be around, and they can compete for talent, they can keep the talent. And so, you know, I hope people, when they hear people call this show, or people like Andy who attend the show, you know, don't just think, oh, come on, just cheer for the home team blindly. They're my favorite, and I don't want to hear this. I think you're giving AEW a pass that is actually counterproductive to what you should be hoping for, which is for them to succeed and grow. And I think Andy's experience was authentic and sincere in what he expressed. All right. So if you're listening to us here, give us a call, 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. You also can email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We'll get to emails later, but I do, as promised, want to get to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois first. And then I know Jay in Hartford has been on hold a while too, so he'll come up after that, I believe. Larry, thanks for holding. What stood out on Dynamite for you tonight?
Well, let's see. I'll try and pronounce the name right. Takeshita is money.
Yes,
I think I mispronounced his name, but I know AEW does catch some flack, and I thought that sometimes they've signed a little too much talent that doesn't get enough time to, well, do much on Dynamite or Rampage, and you know you're stuck on 3-minute matches on the YouTube shows. With that match tonight, he's only 26 or 27. He's been wrestling 10 years. There's nothing but limitless potential for that kid after tonight. He looked like $1 million, and Paige made him look like $1 million. That could be a really good thing. And one of the things I haven't heard anybody talk about, I mean, you're other than your guy there that, you know, became a kind of on-site correspondent, was about the crowd and how a crowd can help a show if it wants to. I mean, you know, there's some times I've watched some wrestling programming. I mean, going back into the 80s, you know, I've been a wrestling fan since the early 80s, and crowds sitting on their hands and acting like they're bored and, you know, chants and beach balls in the crowd and everything, I think can take away from it. But when a crowd is into what they're watching and want to watch it and give things a chance, even though AEW and WWE do the sweetening crowd effects, personally, I think the WWE overdoes it, but even with the crowd effects, you could tell that those fans were having a lot of fun and they liked what they saw. And over the years, I've found that can make a good show, you know, a little bit better. And it can, I sometimes notice when I watch that the wrestlers in the ring can play off that, and it can make for a better product.
Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, we've talked a lot. I think the more negative side tonight so far, that's kind of what we do, right, to critique the show. You can't just say everything's great. It's not really a great content. But I think a lot of the in-ring stuff was really good tonight, and the crowd being so hot for all of it, yeah, it helps bolster it and makes it, you know, it doesn't make it go from, you know, 2 out of 10 to a 7 out of 10, but it goes, you know, 6.5 to 7, right? It gives that little bit of extra juice, that icing on the cake, and that's kind of what this crowd did. And it makes talking segments, you know, the Jericho and Blackpool stuff had some comments that maybe wouldn't have worked in certain cities, but it worked because the crowd was so hot for it and everything felt like it nailed, even if some parts were a little clumsy. And it also, a crowd like this kind of shows you what really did not work, because they didn't react to it at all, or who is just not over in the slightest, or what feud is not working very well at all. And it's good to hear things like that. And yeah, I mean, talking to wrestlers in the past, especially during the pandemic era, I did a lot of ROH interviews, and they were doing almost all their, you know, they're doing all their shows in front of nobody. And all the talent was like, yeah, those bumps hurt twice as much when there's no one there. And you're just doing that in the silence. So, I mean, the crowd is so important for us as viewers, and then for the talent, I mean, it's almost everything. And I think, if, you know, Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins had the crowd tonight that Paige and our friend that I'm not going to try and pronounce again had, then, you know, I think their matches would be even better too. So, yeah, I think the crowd is so important. And, yeah, I think AEW crowds are one of the best assets besides this, the amount of, you know, talent they have on the roster. I think the crowds that they get consistently are such a huge advantage that they have over WWE at the moment.
And I don't think it's like it counts in the category of being negative if you say AEW fans are so good and they're such an asset that AEW should be doing more to feature them. Like, you know, and sometimes it comes across as like critiquing, but it's really there. It's what word in the English language says, you got something good, get more out of it. And it's free, you know, or it's just a little extra work before a show to interview fans. It's like it's a little bit more work to send someone out there and show people milling into an arena before a pay-per-view and just convey to the people sitting at home the excitement in that atmosphere. Every other sport does it. Every other sport does it. Mm-hmm. They show the fans milling in, you know, into the building. And AEW's fans are such an asset. And the difference between an AEW crowd and a WWE crowd is distinct, and they both have pluses and minuses, you know, and they both do the dueling chants that Zach Adorn, good for him, said, come on, people, let's stop doing this. You know, the dueling chants, and, you know, there's certain things that are, I know people enjoy, and they think it's just, you know, the rite of passage if you're in a building, but to do it. But overall, I mean, the energy level and the excitement of those fans and how excited they are to be there, it is. There have been stretches of time where I've watched wrestling and I'm like, And then I'll watch something from like the 80s with a Red Hot Territory. And I'm like, oh man, it'd be so nice if wrestling could get fans that excited about pro wrestling again in that way. And because, you know, WrestleMania has a different kind of buzz than what AEW has. And AEW has it, you know, it's at a pretty large scale. I mean, you know, this, you know, Fertitta Center with, you know, capacity of like 7,000 in a building built in 1969 has character. You know, this is a really kind of cool looking building of its era, and it's intimate and the crowd is packed and it doesn't feel cavernous. And sometimes WWE in the bigger buildings, you lose that intimate energy, but it's not so small like ECW where it was a rabid crowd, but it just didn't look major league. Like, this is a real sweet spot, and it takes you back to, you know, some of the really good territorial wrestling when there was a really hot, red hot baby face or a red hot feud going on and the fans were super into it. So again, AEW just can capitalize more on that, but even when they're not capitalized on it overtly, it's omnipresent. It's there, and it adds to the show.
I can agree with that. Again, as a longtime wrestling fan, you know, if anyone goes on YouTube and watches world-class TV shows from 83 to early 86 and Memphis TV from probably 84 to middle of 88, even some continental stuff, the crowd's eating it up. They're enjoying it. And to me, as a fan watching that, I don't feel like, well, why am I watching this garbage? You know, like 2000 WCW, why am I watching this garbage? And it's like, hey, yep. I feel like this might sound a little odd, but you feel like, to me, at least anyway, in the back of my head, maybe it's subliminal, but hey, this crowd's liking it. They're having fun. Hey, I made the right decision to watch this. I want to see how this show goes. And you mentioned a couple of the clunkier things. Yeah, I'm not going to say the show was great. I mean, the thing with Serena Deeb, it started off good, and I kind of saw what they were doing with her. You know, Tony Schiavone, you disrespected me. Call out Dustin Rhodes, he disrespected me. Things like that. I thought it would have been cute if she said, when she said the only person that, you know, respected her, called it right, was Jim Ross, and Ross could have said something, you know, into the mic real quick. But it seemed like when Dustin came out, I think the camera kind of halfway missed time the slap that she gave him. And then when Thunder Rosa came in the ring, it just got kind of sloppy to me there at the end. But I saw what they were doing with or trying to do there. And I think Serena's finally starting to get the respect I think she really deserves, you know, just from an in-ring performer's standpoint. And the Hardy match there at the end, that felt really rushed. To me, it should have went longer than 7 minutes, but maybe some things before that went a little longer. And when I saw the Joker being Ito, honestly, the first time I saw Ito, I thought she was just obnoxious. Not like obnoxious as I want to see this person get hers. Obnoxious, more like I'm changing the channel while this is on.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight I had that for just a minute, and not that she's an in-ring master, but I'm waiting for a lightning bolt to hit me now as I say this. I think she's gotten a little better.
Yeah. I mean, I think some people want to, you know, ring the gong on the gong shell. On the gong show when she comes out. And then there's other people who find it endearing and they're in on it. And of course, Excalibur is going to, you know, tell you about the background and fill you in. But, you know, obviously with AEW too often, the acts are being put out there and then Excalibur is given the heavy duty of trying to catch everybody up on what a portion of the crowd are reacting to. But the majority of fans at home, in some cases, and not always majority, but a lot of people are like, what's going on here? Go ahead.
I'm kind of familiar with her. You know, I've seen her a few times on AEW broadcasts and YouTube's your friend, wrestling fans. But some people don't like it, but I kind of think the little sideways falling headbutt thing is it's kind of corny and schlocky, but. And again, I'm waiting for the lightning bolt to hit me. I kind of like it. It's at least a little different. Yeah. You gotta say that. I don't think I've ever seen anyone do a kind of a that almost looks like something Owen Hart probably would have tried if they had let him. Overall, I thought the show was good. The crowd, it was kind of like watching those 80s shows where the crowd was just hot, and you feel like, hey, I'm enjoying this too, and I don't feel like a schmuck for sitting here and enjoying this while the crowd's just sitting there and chanting boring and bouncing beach balls and stuff like that. And I'll try and pronounce his name again. Is it Takeshita?
Really good. I give you an 8 out of 10. I'm probably not the best judge, but I'm giving you 8 out of 10. That sounds pretty close.
When you see Takeshita. When you see how it's spelled, to me, it sounds like it should be pronounced a different way, but they need to sign him. That they could really do some things with him, and that was a really good, fun match he and Paige had, and the stuff with him and Punk. Punk came off real well on commentary. You know, it almost reminded me of some of the old time commentary where they would be saying, you know, he's taking too much time. He needs to keep his eye on his opponent. He needs to finish this. See, instead of doing this, he needs to stay on his opponent. Stuff like that, you know. And that was kind of old school in a way.
Yeah, I liked it. I think Punk is – Tyler, do you get a sense Punk's found a comfort zone in AEW? He doesn't feel like an outsider, trying to make sure he is, you know, cool, not stepping on toes, but still trying to figure things out, and instead is sort of the elder statesman who kind of has an understanding of what's going on in that company and his role in it.
Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, you can tell, I think, really getting that first really good in – powerful story with MJF and having a really good match and just being the preeminent story within AEW for months on end, probably gave him that internal confidence to know, like, yeah, I'm still the guy. I still got this. And, you know, who knows what's going on backstage? You probably know better than I, Wade, but if there's people coming up to him, asking him for tips and leaning on him, if he's offering that, et cetera, feeling more comfortable behind the camera, et cetera. I think all of that is coming to play. You can feel it. And yeah, he feels like grizzled old vet. He feels like the captain of the team of, who may not, he may have lost a step, but he's, he's got more, he knows he's going to forget more wrestling than a lot of these young guys have seen in wrestling. And that's kind of his asset right now. And even in the commentary tonight, after the German, he was selling his shoulder, and Punk was like, no, I think he's selling his wrist, because he was selling his wrist the whole match, and that was basically him coaching, maybe telepathically. He's like, no, you should be selling the wrist. You should be selling the wrist. You're selling that all night.
That's funny.
So it's that version of Punk of just being so locked in and, rekindling that. I think part of it is, rekindling that love for being, on the road week in and week out and being just a pro wrestler. You can feel all of that kind of coming to a head right now. So, yeah, I think so.
All right. Larry, any closing words for us tonight?
No, I want to, I hope you can get as many callers, in as you can for, the rest of the show. And, I'll try to call in, next week again. And then, to paraphrase, Gordon Solie, so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thanks, Larry. Always good hearing from you. Oh, and I'll add to Larry's list, watch some early 80s AWA St. Paul Civic Center footage. Mad Dog Vachon, Crusher Blackwell, early Hulkamania. Hulkamania was born in the AWA. AWA fans turned a baby face. The whole Hulkamania act was turnkey for Vince McMahon by the time he hired Hogan, and that's amazing stuff. The High Flyers against Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis. Just some real, that stuff's out there, and when we talk about just vintage crowds, that's what I got raised on, and that St. Paul Civic Center was a major 18,000-seat building, and in that era packed. And the old school vibe meeting new school energy was just amazing during that time period. All right.
I agree.
Go ahead.
I agree completely.
Yep. But you listed some good ones too. And Larry, the first thing I think of is the Sportatorium in Dallas for the Freebirds Von Erichs era. So I was nodding along to that. Yep, for sure. Cool. Junkyard Dog in Mid-South. And when he was at the peak of popularity, anything with Jerry Lawler at the Mid-South Coliseum as a heel or face against stars. Just treat yourself to some YouTube. If you haven't explored early to mid-80s territorial wrestling clips on YouTube, just do it. It'll you know, and compare it to what AEW has now, and you'll see some similarities, but you'll also think how cool it was back in the day when people reacted like it was real, even though I got a secret for you. Everybody knew it wasn't, but the promoters did a better job. I should say everybody. There actually were a handful who were very believers, even when they drove home at the end of the night. Most people believed while they were in the building because the promotion made it possible, and they played into those emotions. And then as they drove home, you know, they talked about how fake it was or whatever, you know. Or anyway, let's go to more calls here. We'll go to Jay in Hartford, and then Brian to Boston's on deck after that. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite? Jay, are you there? All right, I'll go back to Jay. Maybe just drove out of a cell service range or something like that. We'll go to Brian in Boston. Brian, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite? Good to hear from you.
Nice to talk to you guys again. I thought the show was really good, except for like one glaring exception, but I'll get to that last. But I really thought the highlight of the night was Kyle O'Reilly versus Rey Fénix. I thought they would have a good match, but I wasn't sure what to expect. But it was really good. I mean, hopefully Fénix, you know, after the near broken arm he suffered, hopefully he's gonna take a little bit less risk, you know, so as not to kill himself. But I really liked that match. They did pretty well, didn't have any major issues, and Fénix just kind of worked the basic wrestling match for the most part, and O'Reilly looked really good. So he's going to beat Samoa Joe. I doubt it. But then again, you know, maybe they'll have, end up having Jay Lethal's group cost in the match or something. It seems pretty obvious Adam Cole's going to win the whole tournament. But I just wonder what you guys thought about that match.
Yeah, Tyler, looking at the brackets, where do you think the Owen tournament is heading? Is it obvious to you?
Yeah, I mean, so the final is at Double Nothing, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff around, so I want to make sure I have that correct.
Yeah, so we got Kyle O'Reilly against Samoa Joe, and then Cole. Oh, yeah, and Cole's qualified. So, so it's got to be at Double or Nothing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm thinking of the weeks between now and then, and there really isn't much left, so.
Yeah, just one more, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Cole and Joe is just, you know, that's a pay-per-view match to me.
Oh, I love
that. It
doesn't
have to be for the TV title. So that just makes the most sense to me. And I think it's still, we're a ways off. You want to kind of start that breakup with the, the All Elite or the Elite guys. And I don't think it's time to do the O'Reilly Cole match just yet, but I think they will do that at some point, obviously. So no reason to do it now when you can do it later. So that just makes total sense to me. But yeah, I mean, Brian, I'm glad you brought this up because I was worried no one was, but I, you know, to be fully honest, fully transparent, I'm not the world's biggest Kyle O'Reilly fan from an in-ring perspective, but this match was, one of the highlights of the night for me. And it was the great styles clash that was on display here. And that doesn't always work for me. And it worked here. And the last 5 minutes was some of the best wrestling, you know, I even put at the end of my report tonight that I thought some of the wrestling tonight shouldn't have even been on TV because it was so good. And the end of this match felt like, I was like, man, I feel dirty watching this for free almost. And it was just, it was really good stuff. And I was genuinely surprised because, again, that's me not having high expectations for the match, kind of where it was placed on the card and no build. And, you know, it's probably going to be okay, but probably won't get enough time, and it just really over-delivered. I thought it was a fantastic match.
Yep, I agree. It was really fun to watch, too. I thought if my only critique of any of the really good wrestling is, and it's part of a product of being on TV and trying to get your spots in and just sort of modern wrestling, but there were some things where I got a little numb to big moves because I started to sense the wrestlers are just going to pop back up and hit a big move themselves and not really sell it. Usually they wind back around after the quote adrenaline rush to knocking each other over, and then both men are slow to get up, and you kind of have that chance to regroup. But that's my only critique, and if I don't critique that, if I do critique it, people criticize me, and if I don't critique it, some of the wrestlers who listen to this old time, not old timers, but like you know, whatever, 40-something, 40-something. They're like, wait, you gotta, you can't just put over these matches without selling. I hear from them sometimes too. But, you know, it's just my natural reaction watching. It's like you took that dive at ringside, and then you are 4 to 6 seconds later on the top rope doing a dive. Like,
yeah,
it just got to be a better way to tell that story. But all that said, when it's working in front of the crowd and it's this adrenaline rush and they have the crowd in the palms of their hands, I mean, you know, you can – there's a lot of things you can critique about – you know, why aren't there facial bruises? You know, you kind of pick and choose what bugs you. But that match worked.
Yeah, I think. I
oh my God, his chest! Kyle's poor chest. It looked like he fell asleep on the beach on a zero ozone day. My God, yeah.
Yeah, and just to kind of expand on the critiquing part of it, I thought the German suplexes that Takashita and Paige did were really not very well executed. They looked extremely dangerous. I mean, you got to do better than that when doing German suplexes. I mean, they almost broke each other's necks with how that was.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it looked like it to me.
Yeah. I mean, just take the Kurt Angle approach. You know, just do the simple German suplex where the dude goes onto his back. It's not that hard to do.
You know, there's the 80-20 principle that, you know, entrepreneurs or just people talk about where, you know, like if you're running your business, 80% of your money comes from the first 20% of the work you do. You know, there's like people talk about stuff like that, you know, or in your life, you know, 80% of your joy comes from the 20% of things you value the most, whatever. The 80-20 principle, apply that to matches. Like, you don't, 80% of the crowd reaction comes from the moves that are 20% dangerous, and 20% of the moves are needlessly dangerous and aren't adding enough to make it worth it. Oh, I think I just butchered my analogy between the 80-20 principle, but you get what I'm saying? Like, you get so much out of doing something that's so much safer without much of a drop off, if any. Just do the ones that are like 100% safe or nearly that, and don't do the stuff that gives you a little extra. But it's that's where the 80-20 comes in. It's like it's 20% more cool looking, but it's 80% more dangerous. Like, skip that stuff.
Yep.
You know, we're not asking for it. You can, like you said, with Angle, you can do things, and Angle's been through a lot himself physically. But yes, there absolutely are things you can do that are safer, and the crowd is going to love you and lap it up anyway.
There are ways to execute German suplexes. Tony Storm does a pretty good German suplex, and what Paige and Takeshita did was not it at all.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now to get to my main issue with the show is the Joker for the women's. I was afraid it was going to be Maki Ito. I'm just hoping they did not sign her to a contract. Cause talk about. I mean, last week you had a great match between Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm that was unfortunately poorly placed. In terms of time, and the crowd in Long Island sucked for that. They were not good with that match. Now, granted, they were tired or something, but come on, do better. But to go from that this week to Maki Ito versus Britt Baker, that's like a big fart noise, and you know, kind of like if Sean Spears, kind of like one of Sean Spears' fart jokes not going over very well. But at least
he doesn't tell fart jokes. He just always looks like he's laughing at one.
I kind of was tempted to blow a raspberry when I found out Ito was the Joker. But you know, I guess you know, if you're going to bring in like someone who's actually talented and you know that you want to sign to a contract, doesn't really make much sense to bring him in just to have Baker beat him. So I guess, you know, it's good for Baker to get a win and to move on. So in terms of that, that's fine. But at least this crowd in Houston was enthusiastic for the women's matches, not unlike that crap crowd in Long Island last week. But and also I think some of the blame lies to Tony Khan for placing the women's matches at the where he does. I don't think it's like an intentional thing that he does, but you know, it's like you got to do a little better if you want to get more of a crowd reaction. But I did want to get your guys. I'll end my call with a couple of questions on the women's thing. The first question I have is Britt Baker versus Toni Storm next week. Who do you think wins that? Do you think the winner of that goes on to win the tournament? And the other question I have is with that with that segment they had between Red Velvet and Chris Statlander, and then you had Jade Cargill move in, I really think her cut the shit Tony thing is kind of tired and annoying, because Khan doesn't really, I mean, not Khan, Shivani doesn't really say or do anything, so it kind of makes that unnecessary. But they kind of, do you think they're teasing like a potential Statlander versus Cargill match and somewhere down the line? And if they do that, I mean, who do you think wins? But anyway, thanks for taking my call, and hang up, and well, not hang up, but I'll go on mute and listen to that.
All right, cool. Sounds good. Yeah, Tyler, go ahead and take those.
Yeah, so make sure I hit all of them, so let me know if I missed anything. But yeah, I see Baker defeating Tony next week. Not really. I think it's pretty even either way you go, and I probably would be lean more to protect Tony Storm. It just is depending on, you know, what you're going to do with Tony as a result, right? Because the other side of the bracket is, you know, Ruby taking on the winner of Statlander in Red Velvet. And I do not see, you know, I think they're going to want a face heel dynamic in both finals. And I don't see, you know, Tony Storm taking on Red Velvet as the final. That doesn't feel like where this tournament is going. It feels more like Britt versus Ruby, or Britt versus Chris, probably more Britt versus Ruby, to kind of run that back and tell a story there. So it's kind of my take on the tournament thus far. But, you know, with the Tony and Britt question, I think if, you know, Tony loses, but there's some chicanery with Jamie Hayter, and you kind of run that back and give her something to do, that works. But I do think that she has elevated herself beyond, you know, what even, you know, if you compare her to Ruby Soho, another person from WWE coming in off of getting let go or asking to be let go. You know, I think she's got a little bit more potential at this time. It just is that main event. What do you do, right? You don't put her against Thunder Rosa, probably. So you kind of got to let her lie in wait to kind of, you know, have her be the main thing. And then with Chris and Jade, I think that works, especially if something happens in that match. I think Chris Statlander is, you know, below Jade Cargill, but is more of an opponent than Jade has had in a long time. And you can build that as someone who reasonably you could consider beating Jade and taking, you know, her undefeated streak away. So it's a little bit of a lemons out of in the lemonade situation, because Chris Statlander was not part of this at all. But I think that would be a pretty smart move to continue her story and tell multiple stories in the women's division as a result, which is very possible now, and I think would help bolster that division in general. Did I miss anything on those questions?
I don't think so. Bryant, if you're still there, did Tyler cover everything you wanted to cover there?
Yeah, he did, but I also wanted to get what you think will happen.
Yeah.
Wade, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am torn, but I think I want, and I think we're going to get a Tony Storm victory in this tournament. I think they should do that. I'm leaning towards that's where they're going. I think you can tell a story, but I don't like it. That she came up short in the, you know, and the only hedging is, you know, do you want the dog to catch the bumper? Do you want the chase to be over, so to speak, this quick in terms of, but I, you know, it's not a championship match, it's a tournament. So to me, don't define down Toni Storm as just another, you know, kind of, you know, pushed woman wrestler of the month or 2 month period before she just disappears to dark again, or, you know, whatever. I think she's, that there's not a high risk of that happening, but I think fans might are conditioned to think that happens with some of the women who get pushed. You know, I mean, there's so many women who get pushed, and then, you know, Hikaru Shida and Nyla Rose and on, who it's like they're around and then they're not around. So to me, as you know, I talked about it with Punk earlier, like I think Toni Storm showed up looking like she wants to prove something. She's in great shape. She's just moving around better than she was, frankly, in WWE. And I think and has a spring in her step and a vibrance to her that I just think exudes centerpiece star. And if I'm Tony Khan, I made the case about CM Punk earlier. I do the same thing with Toni Storm. Make June, July, August, and September about Toni Storm and CM Punk more than anyone. You know, like it doesn't mean there has to be a huge drop off, but I also don't make it just ensemble where it's almost all the same. But really, like, let people know these are, and you know, I don't want them to skip out on Jade Cargill or the tag division and all that. You can do other things at once. But Tony Storm and Punk are a different look than a year and a half ago in AEW. And I think you want to give that to people. And I think having Storm win the tournament gets you a lot closer to creating a true new top, top star in that women's division.
I think you're thinking along the lines of what I'm doing, because I actually started writing columns for PWMania.com, and I actually wrote one about they don't pay me anything, so I'm not shilling or anything, but I kind of wrote how...
Oh, we'll edit it out. Don't worry.
Yeah. but I kind of wrote how I think they should have Storm win. Like, the ideal booking scenario to really get Storm over as a star, and it kind of feeds in what you were saying going into All Out in, what is it, September. They could have her win the tournament, and they could do kind of a slow build between her and Cargill and the baddies, and maybe possibly have like a Jamie Hayter face turn in the coming months to kind of aid her. And they could really build up a match, I think, like a really big match for the TBS title between Cargill and Storm. And I think that would be, you know, and you could, and they've been kind of teasing Hayter breaking off of Britt Baker's group for a while now. So it could be sort of a mutual respect thing. So I think you could build like a really solid feud there leading up to All Out. Granted, it's going to be challenging to do it over 2 or 3 months, but I think it can be done if it's thought out well.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Brian. I'm with you.
Thank you.
Yep. Very good. All right, we'll go to actually, let me try Jay in Hartford one more time, because we did promise him earlier and we didn't hear. Jay, are you available?
Hey, what? I am here.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I went to earlier. We didn't hear you. So, great. Yeah. What stood out on Dynamite tonight to you? Good to talk to you.
Hey, appreciate you circling back around there. Tyler.
Yeah.
So I want to talk Hangman and the match tonight. And forgive me, because I don't know. Is it Takeshita?
It's the theme of the show. Takeshita. But
okay.
KT works.
Takeshita.
KT works. Yeah.
Excuse me. Okay, KT, yeah. So the segment, I'll start with it reminded – the match was great. I enjoyed it for the most part. But it reminded me of Raquel Gonzalez last week on SmackDown coming out to face Ronda Rousey. In that case, you know, you kind of get the impression that WWE wants you to see Raquel as a big deal, you know, having her come out to face the champion, whereas in AEW, you don't know that that's what they want, because we're not sure if we're even going to see KT again, I'll say, on Dynamite, or what his status is going to be in AEW going forward. So there were parts of me saying, oh, you know, maybe the match should be a little shorter, but that's not what they do. You know, so I'm like, okay, it's fine that they're having a standard Dynamite type, you know, great match even on a Wednesday night. But I just hope that it maybe leads to somewhere. Otherwise, you could have given the spot to someone who's going to be around more, you know, on a week-to-week basis. As far as the there were a couple things in the match that I think did not work. Again, the match was good, but work-wise, they hit a spot where, and I wasn't looking at the screen, so I was listening and I wasn't looking at the screen, and Takeshita hit a suplex, or actually Hangman hit the suplex first, and like, second later, KT hit a suplex, and I'm thinking, wait, how did he hit a suplex so fast? He just got suplexed. Like, don't tell me they're like,
yeah,
no selling. So I kind of,
yeah,
I looped back, you know, DVR. And what was really good about it, which actually like sold me more on KT, we'll call him, was when Hangman hit the suplex, he sold. even though he turned around and he hit one right away, he really sold the suplex, and then it was almost like, I'm hurt, but I just got this burst of energy so I could kind of return the favor. But then Hangman did not sell his suplex at all, and I never thought that he wasn't a great worker, but it looked really bad that he didn't sell that suplex. They went right into the next spot. So that was the one, as good as the match was, there were some moments where I thought, I can tell, like, oh, we're just trying to get to this spot. And it was the end of the match which really made it, which was the worst part of that, because Hangman Page finally hit the KT, if we were calling him that. But KT did not, like, that's the champion's finishing maneuver. And when he hits that, his opponent usually does not get up. They're supposed to be down for the count. Like, we're, you know, but this guy, he didn't even go down, let alone stay down. He acted as though the move, you know, it hurt, you know, he was impacted by it a little bit, but he basically stayed in the position because they had to go right to the GTS, which I thought the segment would have worked a lot better had the guy just fallen down and then Hangman said, nope, I'm not going to pin him. I want to add insult to injury here. You know, he looked at Punk, and this is where WWE would have done that a lot better. You know, sometimes they overdo it, but they would have milked the moment. The guy's down, Hangman looks, I'm not pinning him, let me go for the GTS there. And so I didn't like the fact that he didn't go down from the Buckshot Lariat at all. And I'm like, come on, we're supposed to be building to a match that we want to see between Hangman and Punk. And I'm thinking, like, you didn't do anything. The match was good, but you didn't do anything to sell me on Hangman's work rate, so to speak, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, some of the critiques first of all, great, you know, observations of the match and good attention to detail. And some of the critiques are issues, you know, that some wrestlers I've talked to have with Hangman in terms of there's things he does well and there's things that he still isn't kind of at that world-class elite level instincts on. And the thing is Hangman's aware of it and insecure about it. From what I'm told, I don't know how much he's got on record about that. It's sort of his character, on air, but I think it's reflective of, you know, there is some insecurity with him and, you know, it's tough because you're compressed in this short, you know, rapid fire window. I think it was John Moxie in his book who talked about, you know, for all the bad things about WWE and the whole, you know, experience with certain things that they do. It's like, there are things they teach you that people make fun of that are really good and good to learn and good to have drilled into you, like milking moments, not just moving to the next thing real quick and, you know, letting some of the waves just wash over the moment. And, you know, it's not just Hangman, obviously, but you can, within the confines of that, I think you're pointing out, Jay, do what Takeshita did and sell. And you can sell in the midst of a comeback even. You know what I mean? Like, there's a way to just not shake it off. You know, I call it the Tommy Dreamer comeback. You know, Tommy would take this huge beating, and then, boom, suddenly he was just 100%. And you're like, why was I feeling bad for you for the last 8 minutes? Well, you got the life beat out of you, and now you're just 100%. Like, Hogan, you know, fired up and got energy from the crowd when he would Hulk up. You know, there was like, he milked the moment and made it feel like the fans were part of it, and there was some sort of, you know, adrenal gland assistance going on. And in wrestling, sometimes in this rapid fire stuff, there's no chance to even give yourself a story to believe in that makes it believable. So I don't want to over nitpick that one spot in the match, but it is a theme in wrestling on a show that feels sometimes a little panicked that your attention span is so short that if we let something breathe a little bit, you're gone forever. And it makes the show more exciting, but it makes it less efficient. And I think sometimes actually less dramatic. Tyler, you want to add anything?
Yeah. I mean, I agree 100% on the culture of the show and the way the matches are performed it's very breakneck speed, but also, you know, and this is not a critique of WWE as I say this, but like in WWE, if you're on TV wrestling somebody, there is a good chance you've wrestled that person, you know, in the double digits amount of times, and you know their style, you know their tells, you know all that stuff. And I think within AEW, especially, I mean, almost every match is a new match, and you've never wrestled this person before, especially on live national television. And I think all those critiques are valid, and there's things you can do, and there's people that perform better in that capacity. But, you know, all the nuances that you brought up there, it could be literally, you know, Hangman could be pissed that he didn't sell something the way he should have, and then he didn't sell as a result. You know, a sort of a postmodern receipt that Hangman gave instead of hitting him hard. You know, he did it that way. So there's things like that, and you know, if they've worked multiple matches together, I think some of these stuff would be cleaned up. And you know, how much communication is out there too. You know, if English is not the first language for everyone in the ring, it's hard to, you have spots that you have laid out, and then some things can kind of get muddled. And, you know, Hangman is not CM Punk. He's not had 20 years of experience, et cetera. So I think all that's valid, and all that is more so on the way AEW presents it, the speed, the amount of times you wrestle someone, the amount of reps you get, et cetera. So, yeah, I think all of it's valid, and it's, yeah.
Cool. Yep. Jay, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, so appreciate you guys' take on that. And one more thing on that match that I wondered as the match went on was, you know, they're good with presenting, you know, Dynamite. We're not waiting until the pay-per-view or the, you know, the big live event to give you quality in-ring work. And so I do appreciate that about AEW. But as I watched this match in particular, I'm thinking, is the Punk match with Hangman going to be any better? So it was like, the match was good, but I'm thinking like, aren't you supposed to be trying to get me to want to see the pay-per-view right now? I could probably do more so with a rematch between Hangman and KZ. So I think maybe that's something that they
wow.
should think yeah. about. You know, we should be building towards, not necessarily just, you know,
yeah.
pardon the expression, like blowing our load. Like, you know, it's just that I thought of that tonight. I'm like, well, there's no need to watch Hangman Punk because it may not be as good as this. I don't know if anyone else kind of thought about that.
I mean, it was that good, you know. I mean, for it wasn't epic in length, but yeah, I know what you're saying, Jay. Jay,
yeah,
anything else?
Yeah.
We're approaching a long show here, so I kind of want to keep things moving along before we keep everyone too long here.
No, we sure are. So thanks. So the last thing is tag champs, Lucha
yeah.
Express or what is it, Jurassic Express. They, I liked when they came out and interrupted Hobbs and Starks against you know, Swerve and Keith Lee, because up until now, you know, they're a babyface tag team. Luchasaurus is kind of silly. I feel like they're kid friendly, whatever, whatever. And just when their music hit, I'm thinking, okay, I like this. They're showing a little edge. They're interrupting, and you know, they're going to come out and, you know, maybe showing a little fire. But then they didn't say anything, and Christian did all the talking, which kind of soured me on it a little bit. But I do know that promos aren't their strong suit, and that's what he's there for—to be the mouthpiece. But what I didn't like about it, and I'll let you guys just, you know, talk on this and I'll hang up. Christian, AEW has been so good. And Tyler, you just mentioned like the kind of the amount of times we see guys. And I know you didn't mean it this way, but in WWE, it's like, if I'm facing you tonight, I faced you last week and the week before or whatever.
I mean,
I didn't like that. I love it. So I didn't like that they, Christian says, okay, let's do a triple threat match, tag team match for the titles at the pay-per-view, what have you. And let's do a triple threat singles match next week, like before the title. And this is exactly what WWE does. And it's one yeah. of the things that I love about AEW that, you know, if we got a, you know, six-man tag coming, we're not going to have some of the participants facing each other tonight. Or, you know, if there's a single match coming up, we're not putting them all in a tag match the week before. So, as long as they don't do it every time, it may not be a big deal, but that was just one thing I didn't like was making a triple threat tag match, but then a triple threat singles match leading up to it.
I know.
It felt too WWE-ish.
I agree. I mean, I'm, you know, pretty anti-triple threat match in general. And then, AEW's brand is we're not WWE, and yet there are things that they do. You know, Todd Martin's talked about this. You know, if you're Tony Khan, you want to be cognizant of what frustrates a lot of people who are disgruntled WWE viewers or former WWE viewers, and you don't want to remind them of it or start making them think you're going down that same road. You know, an exception here and there is fine. I don't want this to be a pattern. And I mean, if they had a hard and fast rule, no triple threats and no fatal four ways and no six pack challenges, I would be just fine with that. I don't even like. There's some things WWE does that I don't mind as much as others, but that's beside the point. I just think AEW should do just not make their brand in great part. There are things we just don't do because WWE does them too much, like distraction finishes. If WWE didn't overdo it, let AEW do them now and then. But because WWE does it so much, they have ruined the concept. And so, you know, AEW should be cognizant of that. I felt that, you know, TNA over the years should be counter-programming more of what WWE was doing. And, you know, watching every week and going, how can we be different? Eric Bischoff, you know, has talked about this with me and others. You know, he sat down at the beginning of you know, when Nitro got approved and he had the legal pad out, he drew a line down the middle and he said, what does WWE do? On the left. And then on the right, he goes, we're going to do something that's distinctly the opposite or different than that. And I don't know that Tony's ever done that. I don't know how much WWE he watches. I don't know if he's hearing from people who are like, oh, we might not want to do that because WWE does it. But I would want that voice in my ear if I were Tony. Tyler, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just in general on the idea of the triple threat match for the tag titles, I don't like babyface groups that are unintelligent and, right, you know, you're making more opportunity for you to lose. So I don't like that from a psychology standpoint. And this to me just feels like a way to get the titles. They're coming off of Jurassic to me, and it's a way to protect them. So I don't know if that's some backstage politicking too for Jungle Boy, et cetera. But that's kind of the vibe I got here. And I think it was unsuccessful and kind of abrupt in the way that they were like, it had big, like, hey, we don't have a match on the pay-per-view energy, which is not great. So I think that's kind of why it wasn't brought up till, you know, 2 hours into the show, because it was pretty unsuccessful. But I think the match will be good. I think that's kind of the theory for this card. I think the build has not been strong on lots of matches, but I think they should be pretty good nonetheless. So take that for what you will.
All right, cool. Jay, any closing words?
No, that's all I got. You two have a great evening, and we'll do this again.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Good, always good to hear from you. All right, we'll go next to Deke in Michigan. Deke, thanks for calling up. We're not going to go too long because we're past 2 hours here, but I'm glad you called, and what's going on Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade, thank you so much, man. I got 3 points, if I can get to them, which I know we're over 2 hours, man, and I'm calling super late. First of all, great show, man. I think a ton of people have made a lot of great points tonight, including you. Man, I agree with dang near everything you said, except for one thing, which the last two callers have mentioned. No, I know. But the last callers have mentioned it, and I'm going to add a further step. I thought that match with the guy who you don't even know his name, I thought it sucked for exactly what they're talking about, and I'm going to go a step further. Who's everybody talking about in that match tonight?
Deke, talking to the mic, it sounds like you're moving around a little bit and we're losing your voice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who's everybody talking about in that match tonight, guys? They're not talking about your world champ.
I know.
Yeah. A guy
well, a
that
match
nobody
can be,
knows his name.
A match can be really good, but also not serve its ideal purpose. Yeah, and I think that's what you're getting.
And that's my point, and you know I've called numerous times. That's my point with this entire franchise. A lot of times, they book for the night. They don't book for the long term, and they don't book for, you know, you're making who's supposed to be your top guy not look good. He was the third player in that match tonight, and that's why the match sucked. CM Punk overrode him, overshined him for the home crowd because he was on the mic and he was outshining Hangman. And this new guy, who nobody even knows, was overshining him in the ring. And this is your world champion. And then also other guys have mentioned match placement tonight, which I do think, and I love Brian's call, called it a wet fart, I think, or a fart noise, whatever he said. I kind of had the same feeling exactly with some of these jokers today, and I think joker is the appropriate word for tonight. But there are a lot of people that were happy that Johnny was there. But, okay, they're all hyped up about this, and then your world champion comes out. That's horrible placement for your world champion. That's horrible placement. I mean, you did everything wrong tonight by way of your world champion. And I this is nothing new. And as much as I don't think there's anything special about Hangman, they have not helped him at all. And I think tonight is a microcosm of his entire world championship reign. That's my first point, guys. If you want to say something, I know other guys have mentioned it. If not, I'll move on to the other one.
No, go ahead and move on to the other one. I mean, I think you made some good points. They're pretty self-evident.
Yeah. The other one is has not been mentioned much tonight, but this Jericho thing, what are we doing? What are we doing here? It's incredibly bad. His stable is incredibly bad. And, of course, this stuff got run by Regal. It got run by Moxley. We're going there. We're going to go there. We're going to go to their addictions. We're going to go to their problems. Obviously, they gave the okay to it. They obviously gave the okay to it. But there's a lot of people at home that it's not cool with. There's a lot of people at home that have these problems. And but Wade, and forgive me, I don't remember his name, but I remember at least one time you had someone call and talk about it on this show. And, you know, and if not personal, maybe family members and things like that. It takes you out, man. It takes you out. And they did this before, 10 years ago, with the CM Drunk angle, if you remember, at WrestleMania 28. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was terrible. It was terrible. I mean, that whole feud was so bad. And here we go again. And then we get a rebuttal, and we get a rebuttal of, well, I stuck your toothbrush up my butt. Like, really? That was the rebuttal? Well, I put your toothbrush up my butt. First of all, I don't know if I'd be telling people that. Second of all, like, what are we doing? Did seventh graders write this? Like, what are we doing? Bryan Danielson, and I know a lot of people like the Blackpool thing, but that guy just stood there the whole time, did not talk again. He was the hottest thing on the planet 7-8 months ago. Didn't talk again. Moxley talks, and he just spits swear words out. It's not good. It's not good.
Tyler, talk about the Jericho Blackpool segment today.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the whole, I agree. I think it's kind of, again, a lot on the show. If you didn't have, you know, Blackpool didn't have a match, right? And with Yuta being in New Japan for the Super Juniors Cup, kind of threw everything in disarray. If they're not going to go for the tag titles, what do you have them do? And they kind of got shoehorned into this feud. And this promo tonight feels like that to me. And there's really not a lot of things that have happened within AEW that make Jericho and his group want to go against, you know, Moxley and Danielson. So I think they should have more focused on the Kingston and the Santana Ortiz angle tonight than the stuff with Regal. That could have been a brief portion there, but yeah, I mean, on the whole, this is all a means to an end to get to a, you know, the spectacle match on the show, which will be, you know, anything goes, Falls Count Anywhere, whatever it's going to be. And it's going to be the kind of comic relief and ultraviolet match to break up the show. So yeah, I mean, I think Jericho segments, you could typically, he can overindulge. And I think this is an example of that tonight. And yeah, I think Bryan Danielson not talking kind of tells you what he thinks of this as well. If I had to guess.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't think this was one of the stronger segments and yeah, I don't think anybody believes William Regal was doing that. And that's part of the problem. Like if he had just said,
right,
oh, there was one time where did you brush your teeth and it felt a little off, maybe on a Europe tour, maybe, you know, like after a certain memorable match. Well, that was after you did XYZ to someone else and I got even with you and I've never told you. Like, I think someone would believe some sort of specific thing, but no one believes he did it like every night. It just comes, yeah. So, and even then, it's like, do you want to throw your name out there as somebody who was engaging in that kind of stuff? Right? Yeah, I think there's better ways to. I'm a fan of aspects of the Jericho Appreciation Society, but yeah, and Angelo and Matt I think could be used in good ways, and I think Danny Garcia is a real talent, and I think they could be doing better material. This was, you know, a showcase for Jericho and Regal go back and forth, and it felt a little self-indulgent and excessive, but you know, yeah, I guess that's my take on that. DQ Stadio, third point.
Yeah. Well, and last thing on that, I agree with you there. But you know what? I don't know if these other guys can hack it or not, because to me, and maybe I missed something here or there, but to me, it has been Jericho and Regal mainly on the mic and no one else. And the material the other guys are getting is not enough. Like, I know a ton of people are upset about the way Santana and Ortiz have been booked for years now, and this really isn't helping them. I mean, they're getting really nothing, and they got nothing again tonight. Third point, and I know this will ruffle some feathers, and anybody that's listening to me knows, MJF thing don't work for me. It doesn't, because once again, this is now the third angle in a row where someone has had to go through all of MJF's, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to fight him, you have to get lashes, you have to do it. Why do they have to do all this stuff? This is the third angle in a row. Jericho, Punk, and now Wardlow. Like, why is he booking the show? When did he become the booker?
But tonight, they've explained it again.
Yeah,
but, I mean,
but
it is
come
explained
on,
in the sense. I mean, it's far-fetched.
It is, but it's not a good.
Up.
You're right. It is explained, but it's, come on, man. It's the same thing again. And now the lashes again.
Yeah, so I thought, I liked that this segment didn't waste time. Like this segment wasn't a reason the show ran long. This was a promised segment. They delivered. They got in there. They started the lashes. Wardlow no-sold it. He finally winced, and the heel got the better of him by cheating, but with a low blow. That wasn't part of the agreement. They've established MJF has Wardlow under a personal services contract. Far-fetched, but they're consistent with telling that story with a certain framework. And Wardlow's sort of like, yeah, give me your best shot. I'm fine. A low blow was not what he was expecting. I thought that they swiftly got through this and the crowd was into it. And MJF got like booed out of the building and Wardlow was super over. Spears was an obnoxious agitator. I thought that for this segment, they did a good job with it. And I think people are going to be anxious to see Wardlow get MJF in the ring. And frankly, they're going to be excited to see Spears get beat up too. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think it's effective, but I agree when MJF laid out all the stipulations for Wardlow to get his match, that was, two or three weeks ago. I felt the same concern of like, okay, the next MJF feud cannot have this because it's like having, you know, when AEW does Blood 3 weeks in a row and you're like, all right, we got to not have Blood for a while. It's in that vein, right? And when you are noticing it, you have to respond to that. So I think all of them have been different in their build, and of all of them, the Wardlow one, it makes the most sense in storyline because he's got the personal contract thing and it is what it is sort of thing. But I think they've gotten everything everywhere they needed to go. They need Wardlow to get revenge on his accountability buddy and Sean Spears. We'll get that next week. He'll get his revenge against MJF at Double or Nothing, and then we'll move on from there. And so I was not a fan of doing the same format again, but I think it's been as effective as possible. But yeah, I really am curious to see what MJF does, presumably after a loss, his next feud. How does he go about that, and how does he build a 6-8 week story without doing this? Because I think that's going to be a stretch, and I'm curious to see what he does.
Very good, Deke. I appreciate the call.
You and yeah, I completely agree. But again, in a capsule tonight, that Wardlow thing was great. Wardlow's facial expressions when he got hit the first like five times were awesome. That's the best Wardlow's ever been. And in a capsule, it's great, but in the macro, it's the same thing. Last thing, how is this match going to end? Does Wardlow squash him? Because of the result of some of the other matches? Does he squash him? Thanks, guys. Go VIP. You're the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it very much. Tyler, do you have predictions on that match?
Yeah, I mean, I look to, you know, Wardlow taking on CM Punk, and he thoroughly destroyed him. I think, Adam Page on commentary months ago was said that Wardlow is the guy he's most worried about when he was calling one of his matches. So, I don't think it's going to be a long match, and I think there is going to be some shenanigans to make it 10 to 12 minutes, but I think, I think Wardlow wins pretty convincingly. And I think that's the way to go as well. I mean, I don't know, maybe 12 minutes where you have, you know, MJF in 80% control, but Wardlow does this ending sequence and looks like the scariest guy in the company.
You know, MJF has been built up and protected as a loudmouth heel that you want to see get beat up, but he disappoints you because he's so good and so tough and so effective in the ring against everybody he faces. And I don't think it helps Wardlow get over if MJF looks like he's this hapless, you know, undersized heel who just gets thrown around and beat up like it's an Omos situation in WWE. I think MJF's got to fight even Steven, look credible. And I think AEW and Tony Khan, and I don't know what's happened in the last week between them, but, you know, with the stories about the tension and the blow-up and the disenchantment and all that. And I don't know where Tony is on this, but until this stuff, you know, came out, I would have thought that Tony is projecting MJF to be his world champion sometime in the next year, maybe the guy who wants beats Punk. And I don't think you have Wardlow manhandle and dominate and pin him. If that's, I don't think you can do that and have that still be the plan. I think you can have Wardlow win, but I think MJF has to look surprisingly credible against a powerhouse like him. And it has to be a story that's told then when MJF ends Punk's reign, then Wardlow is ready to be a challenger. And you look back at that match and go, look at what happened when they wrestled back then. And now the world title's on the line. I think there's a story arc there that can be done if, you know, and Tony Khan's got a year and a half of MJF if he wants him, you know? So I'm still looking at MJF Wardlow being competitive and MJF looking like he belongs in the ring with him.
Yeah. And that's, I was not portraying just a squash match.
Yeah.
I'm just more of an MJF style match where he is, you know, using unique underhanded skills to, I mean, ideally you want to have him go, yeah, toe to toe, but I just don't think that's the story being told either. You know, it's probably a handcuff to a middle rope at some point. Sean Spears is involved, et cetera, which I think is less good than what you're projecting. Again, like most things I say here are what I think is going to happen more so than what I think should happen. I think you're good at giving the actual probably good perspective on what should happen. But, and I think of all the storylines going into Double or Nothing, I think seeing how this match goes, if you want to go wrestling conspiracy theory, I think there'll be a lot of, a lot here to judge what's happening behind the scenes. So I'm excited to see that.
All right, Ryan, we'll wrap up the caller portion with you. Usually have 3 points, and often we hit them rapid fire, which is good considering how long the show has gone. We're getting close to a record here. Ryan, welcome. What have you got first for us tonight?
My first question is on CM Punk. It seems like he's created quite a stir tonight on social media with his T-shirt tonight. Is there any way this possibly could get turned into a storyline with, say, Adam Page? Because he was looking at him kind of weird tonight when he was wearing that shirt. Or maybe are they bringing in Gunner, who had some choice words for Punk tonight, or just this Punk being Punk?
Yeah, a Punk, for people who didn't see or forgot or didn't notice, he wore a pro-choice abortion rights T-shirt to the ring. It's certainly a big issue, and people feel very passionately on both sides. Punk let his stance be known, and some people, you know, even if they agree with Punk on his position, might think, you know, they don't want to watch a wrestling show thinking he's, you know, that he's bringing that kind of real life stuff into it, or it's going to be divisive. Other people are going to cheer him and celebrate the fact that he has the clout and the leverage and just the willingness to put himself out there about something that he feels is more important than what it does to his wrestling character. Yeah, but, you know, Punk, if you're a fan of Punk, you don't have to agree with everything he says. You just have to know he has strong opinions, and he's going to be pretty unfiltered in expressing them. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, well, I certainly think Adam Page is not going to disagree with him, knowing his political
totally
leanings
not.
As well. But, it didn't affect me at all. It's a more positive for me, to be honest with you. But that's just me, and I think just in the world, I think if people in the position of CM Punk spoke their mind one way or the other, I think things would probably be better than if we silo everything all the time, personally.
Yeah.
That's just my take. I think, you know, that's why it's that. And that's why, you know, I don't talk about stuff here on the show because we're talking wrestling, but I think it, at least being a conversation is probably positive, in the long run, and not talking about it leads to, just not being informed and not saying people aren't informed, but yeah, you got to talk about things to know how you feel about things. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
Before I throw back to Ryan, JB from Detroit said, did you see one fan's reaction to CM Punk's shirt? They apparently X'd out their CM Punk sign, tore it up, and threw it to the ground. Talk about not understanding the Punk character in the first place. It's going to happen.
I would say Punk would be happy about that fan doing that. If that's so that's part of his character, you know? If he came out and said that too, I think that would be more – Punk circa 2011 than anything. So I think that would be only good for his character.
All right, Ryan, back to you.
My second question is on the Owen Hart tournament. Do you think Dr. Hart has any influence on who wins these tournaments?
No. I don't think she wants any, and I don't think she ought to have any. No, I don't think so. Tyler?
I agree. Yep.
Yeah. What else, Ryan?
And final questions on this Swerve and Keith Lee tag team. They're bragging about being the number five contenders in the world, and this seems a little embarrassing. That would be like if Jim Powers and Paul Roma were going around bragging about they were the number five contenders for the Hart Foundation. So don't you think that promo was a little bit silly that they said that?
Well, AEW has established they have a top five ranking, and they don't rank beyond that. And so – entering the top five, you know, that sort of puts you in title contention. You know, it's not only the number one contender that gets the title shot. Anybody who earns their way into the top five, AEW has sort of established that you now are kind of entering the range of getting being justified and asking for and receiving a title shot. So I was fine with it. I think AEW can do a better job really driving home what those rankings mean and how they're, you know, what the criteria is for it and how they react to it. But I didn't have a problem with it. Tyler?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it either. It's just something I've built in with AEW. I think it's pretty contrived in general, the ranking system. I don't think they do a great job most of the time, pushing it consistently. It's when it's necessary to build good matches, but I'm fine with it because it usually leads to good matches. You know, I'd rather them be involved in the triple threat, Keith Lee and Swerve, than, you know, Stu Grayson, or I'm sorry, he's not got Evil Uno and 10 or something. If they were the fifth ranked team and they got thrown in there because they're ranked and Swerve and Keith Lee aren't. So, you know, they bend it to what they need it to be. But yeah, in general, I'm pretty apathetic toward the rank system in general.
Yeah. All right, cool. Ryan, thanks as always.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. All right, we'll close with one email here, and because we've gone so long, I won't even read the whole thing because Ed hit a lot of points here, but a number of them that we already hit. So he says, I thought AEW was going to shame WWE in how to do a tournament of pro wrestling, but boy, was I wrong. They add gimmicks to the tournament, gimmicks to the matches, Hardy, Darby, anything goes. The Jokers were a total dud. Johnny Elite was not smooth at all. He was waving Joe to move over more. Then the Cole Hardy match, the first Cole attacks Jeff with Matt standing right there. Hello, nothing. Matt just watched. It was Jeff's entrance. But again, the match was to set up the aftermatch stuff. I don't see the significance of the tournament. I don't see the significance of Owen Hart being told there's no video packages, 1 to 2 minutes long, no stories being told about Owen. This is a poorly produced tournament. Is there no one else in AEW's roster to take on Samoa Joe? There's no one they could have used a good showing in a match that gets some type of elevation from being in that spot. here's an idea for the tournament. How about it being under 25 years old? Give young wrestlers an opportunity. Tell the story of a young Owen coming up in wrestling and his uniqueness. You spoke about how he's on the radar earlier on and the importance of it. I don't care who wins this tournament. It doesn't matter one bit. The whole thing doesn't matter. I only watched Cole Hardy because I was interested in the timing since they had so little time left. Anyway, thanks for all the content. BFP shows are great and a worthy investment. Thanks, Ed. Yeah, Tyler, just we can end with kind of a macro reaction to how AEW has handled the Owen Hart Foundation tournament so far.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's more a way to get content on Dynamite and Rampage for literally, what, 3 months? I mean, I think this tournament was announced like 6 months ago, and then you didn't really hear much about it, and then you kind of heard maybe the format, where it's going to end. There's no, you know, prize and anything. So, I mean, not much is really promised with this tournament, right? And there's no like, hey, the winner gets a title shot, or the winner, this is a prestigious event we're going to have every year, and it's like winning a title. It's been pretty fluid, and it's kind of been what it's needed to have been. So I think the biggest point there is like, yeah, they talk about Owen, but they're, you know, and a lot of that could be just trying to get video rights. I'm sure WWE owns almost all of them, if not, you know, maybe minus the Japan stuff, but so it's kind of hard to get that. But I think more talking about Owen and, as opposed to just, you know, he's a great man, go to the website to see what he did, you know, all that stuff. And, but yeah, I think the tournament itself is the first one they've had, and I bet if they have a second one, it'll be a little bit more tighter in form and in length. So, yeah, it just kind of didn't really promise anything. It's kind of felt like that, where it's just kind of, it's been what it's needed to be to get content across TV for multiple weeks. And I would like it to be a little bit more streamlined if they do it next year and, you know, talk about Owen more so and the foundation more than just go to the website. So.
And they don't talk about what it means to win. You know, I wish Adam Cole was, you know, saying, I want to win this tournament and here is why, and do it with a heelish slant. And, you know, just, you know, from the early rounds, just have, I mean, there were some people talked about Owen, but it wasn't consistent enough. And now that we're in the late rounds, like I get, you know, I mean, Joe has mentioned, you know, I'm going to win the tournament first and then I'm going to do this. It's like, almost like, not that it's an afterthought, but it's what I have to do now, but I can't wait for this to be passed so I can get to the next thing. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to have some photos of, you know, just, you know, have access to photos of Owen that they own. And, but again, Tony Khan's aversion to losing any viewers by, you know, testing people's patience with something where they're going to turn off if they think now there's a video package. So, you know, the tournament suffered a bit because of it. All right. Yeah. Tyler, just tell people a little bit about your social media and anything else as we wrap up here.
Very good. Yes. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Tyler. I will post periodically there. And always please go to the PW Torch YouTube page. Check us out. We got content there daily. And if you want to hear the Rampage post show, much like this format, without collars, you can check that out. It's VIP, PW Torch VIP. So yeah, thanks for everything. And yeah, a very good show, and I'm excited for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, really good calls, some good email points made late in the show. And Tyler, it's great talking to you again about AEW, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say about Rampage this week. Fewer people watching than ever because of all these time slot shifts. So your show vital to our VIP members who also are off on the time zone and want to follow it. So go VIP, everybody, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Here are these shows, the VIP versions with ads and plugs removed and a lot of cool VIP exclusive content that I'm part of and that I'm not part of, such as Tyler's Rampage Bowl show. Thanks, everybody.